evening, everybody. It's Matt Bubala here with you and for Justin Kaufman. Justin is he's getting to bed early tonight, I hope, because he's getting up and doing the big show in the morning. He's sitting in for Mr. Cochran tomorrow morning. Hello, Rob Martier.
Maddie, how are you?
Good, buddy. How are you doing?
Not bad. Good to see him.
It's good to see you, too. It's good to be seen. It's funny, you know, I haven't worked the early or an earlier shift like this in a long time. This is one of those shifts that you can totally tell what the season is. Because
oh, yeah.
2 months ago, if I was here right now, it'd be bright outside, people everywhere. Now it's pitch black outside.
It's coming.
And it's upon us.
Yeah. Get the snowblowers ready.
You know, my son Tommy wanted to start it up this weekend. We didn't, but I guess we're going to have to do that soon, huh? You got to get that thing ready. The Farmer's Almanac is predicting a really harsh winter. I don't know if that means anything anymore.
What do they know?
Well, they've been printing that thing for about 150 years, right? But I have to imagine that, I don't know, they're doing it based on charts and the history, and I don't know, maybe they get it better than anybody else. Who knows? If we have a really bad winter, then we'll credit the Farmer's Almanac.
I just rely on Skilling.
Tommy Skilling?
Just turn on Uncle Tommy Skilling.
But he doesn't do a this winter is going to be. He's smarter than that. That's why Skilling's good.
Right.
He's not going to throw his neck out there and say, yeah, there's going to be 45 inches of snow this winter. He's smarter than that. He knows there's 18 different computer models of what it's going to be. He's not in that business. He's telling you right now what it is. It's a smart weatherman.
All I'm saying is bring it on. I've got a brand new snowblower, and I didn't use it a whole lot last year.
You want something awful to happen.
Yeah, I'm ready to rev it up.
You're going to get out there and clear Lakeshore Drive next time it gets shut
down. I'm going to be that geeky neighbor that does everybody's sidewalk, you know, for like two blocks. You know those guys?
That's a good geeky neighbor to have right there.
Yeah.
That's a good guy to have. You know what was 34 years ago today?
No.
34 years ago today, Karen Conti posted this on her Facebook, our Karen Conti here at WGN. The Tylenol scare.
Wow.
34 years ago today, 1982. Still never solved. Think about how we changed everything about the way we buy consumer packaged goods based on that. And they still never figured that out. And now you think twice about just about everything you open, and you look at the, you know, when I open my orange juice and it's so hard to get open, or different products that it'll take you forever to get open. And that's all based on this one event that, you know, killed, I think, what, 6-7 people died, I think, in that scare. But it's never been solved. 34 years, Rob.
I remember that.
They actually thought at one point that the Unabomber might have been involved in it. Ted Kaczynski.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was cleared.
It is unbelievable how fast time goes. No, I mean, seriously, I mean, 34
no,
years ago.
I agree.
I mean, it's just because that was the huge story.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. And just to think of the cost of the way we changed everything. To think back of a time before. I mean, imagine. And because I can't remember, because I was only like 11, so I don't truly remember what things were like before that. But think about all the unwrapping you do of every single thing that you buy, how things are sealed. And, you know, I guess things that were preserved were sealed beforehand, right, in like a tight jar or lid. But now there's always a plastic wrapping around them, or there's some sort of don't buy this if this is broken, or this or that, or, you know, all these different ways that packaged goods have changed so much. Which maybe has protected freshness for some of them, but has just protected us from being poisoned in so many other instances.
Well, the safety and physical manifestations that grew out of that, there were, I know for a fact that colleges and universities started crisis management courses based on that particular episode. I mean, there was a lot that was born from that that tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right, coming up on the show tonight, we've got 4 hours here with you until Patty Vasquez comes in. We're going to have some fun. Brat Pack America is the name of a book by Kevin Smokler. It's a love letter to 80s teen movies. Your favorite 80s teen movie, Rob Martier, what is it?
Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club. Pete, we have a favorite 80s teen movie?
16 Candles.
16 Candles. Now, they say 80s teen movies. I mean, not all of these necessarily fit into, I think, the teen movie category. A lot of them do. The ones you guys have named, War Games, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, My Bodyguard. But then there's a couple that I don't know if they quite, I would say, a teen movie. The Warriors. You guys remember The Warriors, about the gangs in New York?
Who was in that again?
Oh, God. Nobody famous, right? Is anybody famous in The Warriors? It's about like six gangs in New York having a summit, or maybe there's 40 or 50 gangs in New York. There's like a summit. New York is like this, you know, hellhole at the time. And then somebody gets killed. And so now all the gangs are after this one gang, and they're on the run. And there is one guy who's relatively famous who is the lead of the Warriors, the gang from the movie. But
James Remar?
I don't know. A guy that was in other stuff. Let me say that. You've seen him in other stuff as well.
James Remar has been in a ton of things, character actor. Mm-hmm. I like to remember him from a nice arc on Sex and the City as one of Samantha's boyfriends.
Okay.
That's just me.
I don't remember if that was him. Very possible. But I don't know if I'd call that a teen movie. About Last Night, which is a wonderful Mamet play. What I thought it was a wonderful movie starring Demi Moore and Rob Lowe, which maybe you say those two and you say, and Jim Belushi. So maybe you're like, well, that couldn't have been that good. But actually, I thought it really was good at the time. Those are a lot of movies from the 80s. Footloose.
Did Dead Poets Society make
the list? Dead Poets Society is in this. Hairspray. Dirty Dancing. Caddyshack, of course. Repo Man. Karate Kid. Valley Girl, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Who could not love Fast Times at Ridgemont High? We'll talk all about that with Kevin when he is in the 8 o'clock hour. After 9 o'clock, Willie Wilson will come in and talk about this program he's trying to put together to raise money to help people get out of jail who've committed minor crimes, nonviolent crimes, but can't afford bond or can't tell them where they would be going. You know, when you post bond, not only do you post the money, you need to give an address of a relative, a friend, somewhere where you'll be staying so they can keep in contact with you. If you don't have that, can't get out. If you can't say, here's where I'll be, they don't let you out. So we'll talk about the issues that people face. Rob, did you watch The Night Of? It was an HBO limited series this summer. John Turturro starred in it.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm a big John Turturro fan, but I did not see it.
It was really good. Yeah. But so we watched two things this summer. We finally watched Making a Murderer. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, yeah.
We watched Making a Murderer and we watched The Night Of. And the lesson I came away with was, if you're going to be accused of a crime, you better have money for good representation. Because when you watch Making a Murderer, especially his nephew, who gets brought into this murder scenario and confesses, a very limited ability young man, who confesses to gruesome things, but you see the video of the interrogation and he's very much coerced into saying all these things. And then his legal representation, his public representation, basically tries to help the prosecution get right. him to confess to help get this other conviction. And that's why it's actually back in the news recently. His conviction's been overturned because of the conduct of his court-appointed lawyer. In The Night Of, it's kind of the same thing. Once you get... he gets to a public defender, you know, they're just trying to cop a plea and it's just, and then he spends all this time in jail waiting for his trial and the things that happen in there. And I know it's a TV show, but you start imagining, oh my God, you don't want to be in jail waiting for a trial. You want to get out. And of course you don't want to ever be accused of anything in the first place. You want to live a good, clean life and stay out of trouble. But oh my gosh, have money set aside for a lawyer if anything bad ever goes wrong. And I think that's the type of thing that Willie Wilson will be talking about. He had two sons who spent time in jail, and he said they came out very hardened. It changed them. And that's a frightening thing. So we'll talk about that later in the show, as well as, Pete, I apologize. What's the name of our guy that's coming in at 10 o'clock?
His name is Greg Flamm.
Greg Flamm, and he will tell you, sort of, I mean, it's not Antiques Roadshow, but it's sort of if you got something in your house that you think, man, I got this thing. Uh-huh. And I bet it's worth money. I forgot to bring in, I had a football I meant to bring in. So when I was in high school, I got to go with my girlfriend at the time. Her mom worked for the head of the Ann Insurance Company, and I think he's tied into the Bears. So we got to go. They used to have, I don't know if they still do, a huge awards dinner for NFL players here in Chicago every year after the season. And so I got to go to it one year, and I had to dress up in a suit and a tie and the whole thing, which I didn't own as a 15-year-old, but I did. And they gave out these footballs there, and one panel of the four panels on the football was the brown leather of the NFL, and then three panels were white. And you got to go around with a Sharpie and meet all these incredible NFL players and get them to sign your football. So I have a football signed by both Gale Sayers and Walter Payton.
Wow.
And Neil Anderson, who at the time was probably like the third greatest Bear running back, right? Wasn't it Neil Anderson?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got all three of those. But then there's some other autographs on it from other NFL players. And then I might have screwed the whole thing up because I had Chet Kopech signed too. So I don't know if I just ruined that whole football or if there's still, if we can overlook that fact and say, you know, Walter Payton and Gale Sayers, same football.
Can you maybe like manipulate Kopech's signature and make it look like Chet Lemon? Is that a possibility?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I could just wash his off. I mean, what if, does that ruin it? You know, if the other two signatures are still good, can I scrape everything else off and let's just pretend it's just those two there? Or I just take some white out and just put it over?
That's that. Chet? Do it.
And you know Chet was like John Hancock with that stupid football. It's like one whole panel is Chet Kopic.
Well, he's the godfather of sports talk radio.
Yeah.
Why do you have him sign up?
I don't know. I don't know if that's what I want to tell people and that's going to help sell it.
Well, Greg will be able to tell you how much that is worth, or how much you probably could get for it if you were to
decide to sell it. If you were, yeah. Well, that'll be interesting to know. And if you have interesting things like that at home, not necessarily an antique, but something you could describe that's kind of quirky and weird, how does he know how much these things are worth? Is this what he does? He buys and sells goofy things?
Yeah, yeah. He just goes around to various garage sales and flea markets and
that's an interesting way to spend
people,
your time.
To give away stuff for cheap, and then he, you know,
and then he makes millions off of it.
It's fun.
Excellent. So we're gonna have a lot of fun on the show over the next 4 hours. 312-981-7200 is the number. You can call it anytime or text in. Your Cubs are playing tonight, but you're safe to stay with us because they started a AAA lineup tonight. I think Addison Russell is the only player in the lineup who's played more than about 20 games this year. They really just went all out on let's give everybody a rest tonight.
And it's raining.
And it's raining there. And the Cubs were winning earlier. I'm not sure what they're doing. Yeah, it's raining pretty hard there right now. But, you know, it was the first time I had seen any talk about issues in the Cubs clubhouse. Dave Kaplan was retweeting a CSN story about Jake Arrieta being kind of ticked off on his catcher last night. And somebody else complaining
Montero
was kind of annoyed about the way they're handling things. Like, you know, they all feel they should just be full bore. Let's go. We're out here. We want to win. And of course you do. But it's Joe Maddon's job to say yes, but these guys got to play and I want people ready to go come a week from now. I imagine that starting tomorrow, last three games, they will go full bore. I would imagine everybody's starting the starting nine, I would think, for those last three games because they want to be fired up on all cylinders and they're still going to have a lot of time off.
Yeah, they'll play the next Friday.
They don't
play
till Friday, right?
Mm-hmm.
312-981-7200. Let's take a quick break. A little more Cub talk before the news after this on 720 WGN. Texter says that dry erase markers can remove permanent marker. So if I perfectly etch over Chet Kopic's signature on my football with a dry erase marker, maybe I'll just erase him completely off there. I don't know if that'll really work or not. But I have to find out if that damages the football. We'll have to ask that after 9 o'clock tonight. Somebody texted that Legal Shield at $17.50 a month gets you over 300 hours of attorney fees if you have to go to court. $35 a month for a family. But I don't know if you get to choose your lawyer on that. You know, you want to get, you know, some sort of L.A. law type attorney who's really going to be cutthroat and get you out of jail. But that's a good option. But I don't want to, you know, I don't want to plan the arrest that much in advance that I'm saying I'm going to spend this much a month just in case I get arrested. It almost like becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? You're like, well, you're spending all that money. Let's go tear up the town. I got that lawyer on retainer. He ain't doing nothing.
Kind of telegraphing the crime, aren't you?
Yeah. In fact, there's probably a police database somewhere that they know if you've signed up. They're like, well, that dude just signed up for that attorney shield. You better keep an eye on him. He must be planning something.
Well, you know, I mean, they've got health savings accounts now. I wonder if they can have, like, an attorney savings account.
For repeat offenders?
Write it off against your taxes.
Maybe, your company could just put you a little bit in your IRA, put a little bit in your medical fund, put a little bit in your legal fund.
50, 100 bucks a paycheck just in case you're indicted?
Wow, 50 or 100 bucks a paycheck. What are you going to do, Rob? That's a big bond you're going to save it up for. You're hoping only save for like 6 months? You're thinking 4 years down the road. You got a $10,000 bond ready to go.
I'm not planning on doing anything bad, so.
Well, that's good. You should stay that way, young man. So we're talking a little bit about the Cubs headed towards the playoffs. Have you guys watched the wild card? Because the Cubs are playing the wild card winner, right, eventually. And so it's very interesting to figure out because the Mets, the Giants, and the Cardinals, up until a few days ago, were all very tight in this. The race has widened a little bit. Going into today, the Mets were up a game and a half over the Giants. The Giants were up a full game over the Cardinals. But if somehow that tightened up into all three of those teams tying, Pete, did you look into what would happen then?
I did.
It's a crazy scenario. They figure out through interplay or something how to seed those three teams. But what they do then is like, so say, and I believe like a week ago, the Cardinals would have been the A team. It would have been A, B, and C. And the Cardinals would have been assigned as Team A. And then they could decide, do they want to play on Monday night at home or play on Tuesday night on the road? And the other two teams would have to play each other on the Monday night, and the winner of that would then play them on the Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
No, the winner of that would actually sit out. The loser would play on the Tuesday night.
Right.
And then the two teams that ended up winning a game each would play each other like the next night. So there'd be three nights of wild card playoff baseball, which would be awesome.
Yeah.
Especially for the Cubs, because then all these teams are using all their pitching, going through all this stress. I was like really rooting for that. I thought, boy, that would be, it would just be cool to watch as a baseball fan, all that stress over those nights. But now I'm guessing it's not going to happen at all. I think the Cardinals are going to fall off, and it's going to be the Mets or the Giants. That's my guess. Pete?
I am with you. I think it's going to be the Mets or the Giants, and I'm confident that the Cubs are a better team this year, as well they've proven. They've won 101 games so far, that they'll beat both those teams very handily in a five-game series.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I don't want it to be the Mets, I have to admit, just because I have a bad taste from last year. I know they've had a lot of injuries since then. I like the Giants more, even though there's Bumgarner that they got to go against in that series. We've got to take another quick break, and then we've got the news next. And then Adam Hogue, we will go from the best team in Chicago to the not best team in Chicago next. 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Justin Kaufman here on The Download on 720 WGN. Welcome to all the fans of Cubs baseball that have switched out over as the Cubs are in rain delay. Well, Ronnie, if you keep it score at home, Cubs started a AAA lineup tonight. The lineup consisted of, I think, I was saying earlier, I'm pretty sure one player who started more than 20 games this season. I think Addison Russell is the only player who is like in a majority of games this year. Everything else, everybody else. Tommy La Stella leading off and then on down the line. But they're in a rain delay now, and we are here with you until 11 o'clock. Adam Hogue will be joining us by phone, we think, in just a minute or two for our usual Thursday night Bears preview. But it could be possible that Adam's just out hammered somewhere because he can't believe he has to cover this team all season long. And I don't think anybody could blame him if that was the case. I mean, it's his job and all, Rob. But you understand how it is. When the news is always depressing, 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 sometimes you're like, I can't talk about this anymore. I can't take it.
You just want to hit the therapy couch.
Yeah.
You know, I think just cry it out.
That might be what he's doing. I wouldn't blame him. Bears are 0-3 going into this Sunday. Finally, we get a noon game. We had one noon game. Then what were the networks thinking when they said, what about the Bears this year? They were really awful last year. Yeah, let's give them a bunch of night national games. Let's do that. Because it wasn't like, did I miss something? Did everybody think that they were going to be really awesome this year and we should feature them on primetime games? Or is somebody mad at somebody at the Bears and say, you know, let's put them in primetime games. Let them suffer. Let them just stink it up for the whole nation. Or do we watch the Bears across the nation, no matter how bad they are, to the point where they're like, yeah, we're still going to put them in primetime, even if they stink to high heaven? I don't understand what the thinking there was.
I don't know. It's inexplicable.
Detroit Lions come to town this weekend. That's a noon game. Next Sunday, they're at the Colts. That doesn't look good to me. I mean, I know the Colts have no defense, but they have a lot of offense. And the Bears don't have a lot of offense or defense. So, to me, that's a bad matchup for us.
Yeah, they got a quarterback. I think his name is Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
Had some success.
Some. The following weekend, again, a noon start at home against Jacksonville. That's where I think we get our first victory of the season. That's my prediction. I think through the first, and then after that, they got to go to the Packers for another night game. And then back home, Halloween night, eighth game of the year, Halloween night, Monday night, at home against the Vikings, who beat the Packers in their first matchup this year. That Halloween night game is going to be so ugly. I mean, can you imagine if the Bears are 1-7 going into that game, and then the Vikings, who it looks like are going to be on a roll, are coming to town, and it's Halloween night? It's frightening to think about how upset Bears fans will be, possibly, and what they'll dress up as, and what the weather's going to be like, because I feel like Halloween, more often than not, ends up being bad weather. It just punishes children who want to go out and trick-or-treat. It's going to be it wasn't Halloween that night. What was the Monday night game where they honored Butkus? Was it Butkus? And they had the halftime show, and it was like sideways sleet.
Yeah.
Was that a Halloween night too?
Yeah, it was.
Oh man, see, that's what I'm imagining it's going to be. And you know, the Vikings they'll probably honor somebody because it's a national game. The Bears will figure out some way to honor somebody, and then they'll be down like 43-2. The Bears will get two, I think. That'll be the interesting part of the night. 43-2 at halftime. So that could be a rough night for our Bears.
You know what? I'll take the spread on that one.
You will.
I think
42-3. You think the Bears are going to close that gap?
I think the Bears can cover
43-2.
I think they can. I'll take that action.
The Bears are dogs at home this weekend against the 1-2 Detroit Lions, no less. The Lions are only 1-2, and they're favored while the Bears are at home. That's how bad it is here. John Fox wasn't at practice today, right? Was that today that I'm
yesterday.
Hearing sound? Yesterday. Sound bites from an assistant coach because he wasn't there? I'm sorry, but all I know of NFL head coaches is, like, they're insane. Their home lives are awful. They don't know anybody. They have no friends at all because all they do is go to practice and watch film. Where was John Fox yesterday? I feel bad if there's some like horrendously awful excuse and reason he had to be missing.
He was back today. I think he just had a stomach bug.
Now, come on. He had a stomach bug and he missed practice?
Well, so I do all the fans, but...
they don't get refunds on their season tickets. Stomach bug really held him out? That seems odd, doesn't it? I think he was at the therapist. Seriously, think about that. John Fox, do you think he ever missed a day of practice in his life because he was sick? If the team was 3-0, he would have been there. 0-3 is like, you know what? I'm going to take a mental health day. Just tell him I got a bug. I bet he has that written into his contract. Probably has a mental health day. I mean, you need it if you're going to coach this team, right? At what point do you say, okay, we're 0-3? Now, I know it's a 16-game season, so there's still 13 games left. My 15-year-old just today said they could still finish with the best record in football. I couldn't believe he said that, but he did say that. So I said, yes, they could. They could. You're right. And I could, you know, be a billionaire tomorrow. Anything could happen. But at what point in the season, when you start out like this, do you say, okay, this is about the future and not about the now? Is it at 0-4? Is it at 0-5? I know they never publicly say it, but... in a couple of weeks, do you bother playing Jay Cutler anymore if they're completely out of it? Because they're not going to re-sign him, right? There's no reason for them to re-sign him. Do you see if you have something in Hoyer that you want to try to build on? Or I know they'll never admit to be playing for draft picks, but at some point, got to think the fans. And I guess for John Fox, he'll never say that, right? Because he wants to finish strong. He wants to look like he's coaching these guys up. Unless he had some assurances, he's here for 4 more years. You know, a 2-14 season looks really bad on any coach, no matter how new they are. Even though he's only in his second year, that would look bad. And people are calling for heads to roll, and you can't cut 63 guys, but you can cut one for sure. So I don't know how they play that out. The NFL, so you can't go the Theo route, and just say, all right, we're going to tank for 4 years, and then we're going to be awesome. Theo had that luxury that he's got Wrigley Field and the fan base, and a patient owner who bought into the plan and said, okay, let's go ahead and do that. I don't think anybody at Soldier Field or at Hallis Hall is going to say, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's just stink for 4 years. We've been stinking for 10 years. Hasn't gotten us anywhere. No, you have to stink even worse. Even worse? I don't like this plan. But it's funny that the NFL is the one place where they won't do that. It's the one place where you could do it better than anywhere else. It's only 16 games. They're sold out anyways. The revenue from TV is ridiculous. You could go 0-16 and it would be embarrassing and bad. But if it got you Andrew Luck or a Peyton Manning or somebody, wouldn't it be worth it?
Do you trust this organization to Peyton Manning?
No, probably not, I guess. But at some point, you have to, I mean, I can't trust them with their mid-level picks either. It's not like they're finding diamonds in the rough at pick number 18 or 14 or 12, right? Who was the last big pick that the Bears had? I guess Kyle Long was a great pick, and he's played well for them, been a Pro Bowler. But he's not a difference maker on the – he's not a quarterback. He's not a receiver. He's not a running back. He can only do so much. He can only protect one side of Jay Cutler, right? And that's all he can do, and he does a great job of it, and that's great. But, you know, we need 8 more of those guys. You can't draft 8 more of those guys. You need an Andrew Luck or somebody who can do something – to change their fortunes. And I don't even know if that guy's out there in the college draft right now. I don't follow the college game very well to even know, oh, yeah, if we lose all our games, then we get this reward at the end. It seems like those quarterbacks are more and more of a rarity, right?
Well, I mean, I know that they had a chance to grab the Cowboys, the guy that's quarterback in the Cowboys now. They had a chance to draft him, but they passed and drafted somebody else. So I mean, that was obviously thinking that Cutler was going to be healthy and lead them to the
playoffs. Were trying to win now. If we can add a piece that really helps right now, let's do that. And, you know, I was looking forward to this year because I thought Jay Cutler's in the last year. He's going to come out and light it up because he wants to be great. And then we've got basically two first-round picks because our first-round pick last year never played it down. So it's like we got two first-round picks in the field. This, and we got Alshon Jeffery. This could be a he's in like a contract thing because he's, what's that called? He's the franchise tag thing. So he wants to play hard because he wants a big deal. There's all these reasons they should be better than 0-3.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. We're both dummies.
I was winning the confidence pool. So we were in this confidence pool where each week you pick all the games and you assign them a point value. So if there's 16 games, the game you're most confident you're going to win, you put 16 points. And then the least confident, you put 1 point on down the line. And you don't have to pick against the spread. You just pick the winner. And going into the last two games, I was on top. And all I needed to win the whole week, stupid me, was the Bears to beat the Eagles. And that, I mean, at least they didn't tease me with it half the night. At least it wasn't close. At least they just, you know, put me out of my misery early on and said, yeah, this is just not going to happen for you. And I said, okay. I'll just move on then and not even watch. That's fine. And then I knew it was, you know, that was going to happen. Actually, what killed me even before that is if the Packers would have beat the Vikings, I also would have won. And I had to sit there and cheer for the Packers. And I did. And then the Vikings beat them. Gambling is not a winner's game, Rob Martyr. You remember that.
I do.
Do you?
Been stung a few times.
Have you? It's not like I lost a lot of money, but what sucks worse than losing a lot of money sometimes is thinking you might win a lot of money.
It's never been a
and
lot.
You're right
it's,
there.
It's a shot to the pride. You know, it's a little.
It is because you know there's 25 people in this thing, so I haven't won a week in like 4 years because I sometimes get close, but I just never get there. And then it all has to come down to the Bears. It's like, why would you put all these points on the Bears, knowing full well what's going to happen? You should always bet against the Bears because then you got two ways to win: either they lose and you won, you get your points, or they win and while I didn't get my points, hey, the Bears won. That's nice. Always bet against the Bears. No matter what you win, unless you're betting like $100,000, and then in which case I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't bet at all when it comes to the Bears then. Because, you know, if you bet against the Bears with $100,000, that's the week those jerks are going to win the game and really stick it to you. So unless you got $100,000, you know, if Trump wanted to bet on the Bears at that rate, then fine. Go ahead and do it. Hey, Rob, how about that visit by Donald Trump yesterday to the Northwest side? That was a little crazy, huh?
Interesting.
And we only have a few minutes here, but I'll go ahead and ask you, what did you think of the first debate?
Well, certainly Hillary won and decisively.
You would say that. Because I'm asking you because you are much more conservative.
I am.
And so I keep hearing, and I'm much more progressive, okay? So we're on the opposite ends here. And I keep hearing Hillary won. And I'm thinking, Did she really? Is everybody saying that, or just these people that love Hillary saying Hillary won?
No, and I don't love either of them, but I'm a bigger detractor of Hillary's than I am of Trump's.
Sure.
Certainly there were some things she could have done better, but when you look at Trump's performance, that's exactly what you get when you don't prepare for a debate.
And what was so negative about his performance, do you think?
Well,
that he didn't, that he grunted and groaned or kept interrupting, or was it the substance of what he brought out?
That's all window dressing, you know, the sniffling, the this, the that, the facial expressions. There wasn't a whole lot of substance to what he brought to the debate. And if you're going to attack, look, both of these candidates have plenty of ammunition on the other. So if you're going to go on the offensive, then go on the offensive, but bring up specifics. Emails, Clinton Foundation, tying it into all of the stuff that's been going on for the past couple of years, you know, surrounding her record when she was Secretary of State. You know, you can certainly bring up a lot of issues with that.
Yeah.
You can't really do that.
Yeah, but that's never been his thing. It's more grand proclamations. He never gets into the minutia of very specific things. He's got, you know, a few key touch points that really work well for him. I mean, listen, Hillary's a criminal now, right? I mean, that's the thing that's been stuck to her, and it's stuck pretty well against her. I think a lot of people think, even people voting for Hillary, there's this negative perception that they've done a good job of clouding over. Now, you could say she did a lot of that on her own, but they've done a good job of making sure that that's what's remembered. I thought both of them, I think you're right, did a bad job. There were times during the debate where I was like, this is what you should say now. And they weren't.
Right.
You know, there were things that they could have done a better. I think sometimes you're so overprepared for a debate that you're not listening during the debate. You know what I mean? They're not listening to each other. They're thinking about what I'm going to say next, how I'm going to come back from this. And I think there were opportunities to say certain things, to stick to each other, that would have been good, that, you know, they're just not listening for, because they're trying to think, okay. And the debate, that's a tough format when you think about it, because they're allowed no notes, right? They have a blank pad of paper, I believe, and a pen. And that's all they get, correct?
From my understanding.
I believe it. Now, I know Hillary's got the earpiece that everybody's on social media complaining about. She's running a microphone and somebody's feeding her the answers in her ear. That's one of the conspiracy theories.
Well,
But other than that.
Yeah, the big one today was this mystery guy that greeted both President Clinton and Hillary Clinton as they got out prior to the debate. And then they also showed this mystery person grabbing whatever it was from the podium after the debate.
Uh-huh.
And then they also showed him walking off with, you know, with Lester Holt. So more conspiracy theories, but it was interesting.
And, you know, Trump said he was fine with Lester Holt afterwards, but people, the far right, are really lambasting Lester Holt, feeling that he really went after Trump and not Hillary. And I didn't feel that when I watched it, but is that a feeling?
Look, when you lose the game by 2 touchdowns or 3 touchdowns, you can't blame the officials. You know, at some point in time, you have to take ownership of the game that you played.
Yeah.
And therein lies another problem with Trump, is that, you know, look, you come out, you swallow hard, you say, yeah, she had a better debate than I did, but I'm going to get her on the next one.
Yeah.
But, you know, politics, it's a marathon. This is not a sprint.
Well, you know what it made me think of? And I know you're saying that, well, he clearly lost, but it made me think a little bit, except for the likability factor. George W. had a high likability factor. Wanted to go have a beer with George W., right? That's how we thought. Al Gore's out there with facts and figures and a whiteboard and like a mathematical formula. And I think he combined 2 beakers and made magic at one point during a debate. And George W. just kind of stood there and said, all right. And I remember the famous moment when Gore kind of stomped onto the stage and Bush looked at him like, dude, chill out. And that was one of those moments where you're like, oh, my God. It doesn't matter how smart Gore is and how much he knows and maybe how good he would be. Here's the guy people want to hang out with. And I really feel that that made a big difference. Not maybe conservative versus Democrat or things like that, but the undecided's like, yeah, I'm not sure either of these guys. There's a guy I kind of want to hang out with. Now, Trump is not a guy anybody wants to hang out with, and that's killing him, I think, at this point. Because if you don't have all the substance, if you don't have all the concrete plans and the background and everything else you need, you've at least got to be somebody would like to have a beer with. And I don't know if there's a lot of people, even the people that are diehard Trump supporters, that would say, yeah, I could see myself hanging out with this guy.
No, I could buy into that. I mean, Trump's one of those guys where you sit down, if you were to sit down for a beer with him, he would talk about himself and then turn to you and
yes,
say, you know what? Tell me more about me.
No kidding. It is amazing to hear him talk about himself. Like everything. And no matter what you throw at him, you didn't pay taxes. That's because I'm smart. And you know, he should be able to sell that better. He should come back after that and say, listen, you'll see my tax returns when you see them. But the ones you have seen where I haven't paid taxes, here's the deal. The laws of this land allow certain things with your taxes. So I've got lawyers. Because I make a lot of money, I've got lawyers that check everything, and I pay as little tax as I legally have to. But I pay every cent I legally need to. And I want to get America to a place where more people have the wherewithal to do those things. That's how he's got to sell that. Like, I want to bring everybody along with me.
Although that was one rare moment during the debate that I thought he cornered Hillary a little bit, where he said, okay, fine, I'll release my returns if you release those emails.
He did. Yeah, that was interesting. But, you know, and here's where Lester Holt went, wait, so you're negotiating now? And then it kind of put him on the defensive with that. That was a good line.
Which I didn't mind that Lester said that. I mean, keep him going.
Yeah. But I thought that was, I mean, I understand the line, but it's like, just release the stupid things. You know, you've got what I don't know. Maybe we're going to find something. Maybe he just thinks, hey, if I lose, I don't want everybody knowing what's in my tax returns. There's a lot of business information that's going to get, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that's his whole reason. Not because I don't pay taxes or I cheat my charities or whatever. He's a business guy, first and foremost. He knows he might not win this thing. And I'm sure he's thought about November 10th and what he's doing then. And if it's not in the Oval Office, he's got an empire he wants to grow because of this. And his lawyers might be saying, dude, you know, you got a lot of deals that all of your people that work against you are going to find out about if you release these returns. Don't do it if you don't have to. 312-981-7200, Matt Bubala in for Justin Kaufman on the download on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Justin Kaufman on the download. Justin's taking the night off because he had to get to bed early because he's sitting in the big chair for Mr. Steve Cochran tomorrow morning. So you can get your Justin Kaufman fix tomorrow morning starting at 6 a.m. right here on 720 WGN. Very excited to be sitting in tonight because sitting next to me right now is a gentleman named Kevin Smokler. His book comes out next week. It's called Brat Pack America, A Love Letter to 80s Teen Movies. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Hey, man. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming in. You said that you had to start out in Chicago because so many of the 80s teen movies really are Chicago-centric.
It's the capital city of Brat Pack America, as laid down by master builder John Hughes.
Even though probably nobody from the Brat Pack is even from Chicago,
no,
are they?
No, I came up with Brat Pack as sort of a stand-in for how we could describe the decade in
a
quick phrase.
Sure.
But even the phrase itself is fraught with flaws.
But that was the phrase of the 80s if we're talking teen movies, right? That was the most famous thing in a way to come out of the aura of the movies, right? The Brat Pack. I mean, is there another phrase that could in any way sum up teen movies of the 80s?
In two words? No.
Yeah, not really, right?
Yeah.
Even though that gang, so you were telling me off the air that phrase actually came from St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah, a New York Magazine article in June of 1985 described the cast of the filming of St. Elmo's Fire as the Brat Pack. And the phrase itself was a mess to begin with because the actors were 10 years apart in age, so it would hard to argue they were of the same generation. If you look at the set of The Breakfast Club, Judd Nelson is 24 and Molly Ringwald is 16. They're probably not of the same generation, even though they were making movies about teenagers at the same time. And they were at different stages in their career. It was essentially a term invented to create a sloppy shorthand.
Sure.
It just happened to stick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of these actors had been in a bunch of teen-type movies together. So it sort of made sense playing off the Rat Pack to the Brat Pack.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing to me is when you get the movie that brings out the term, Molly Ringwald isn't even in it. And if I think of an 80s teen actor, it's Molly Ringwald.
Yeah.
To me, she's central to, well, what, it was three big movies, right?
It was 16 Candles, Breakfast Club,
Pretty in Pink.
Yeah.
And that was it, right?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure she was in other stuff, but there's nothing else that you and I are going to think of and think, oh, Molly Ringwald. Right?
I have a soft spot for Four Keeps, the movie she did in the early 90s, but that's probably just me.
Probably, yeah, because I don't even, that doesn't make any sense to me. But like, but there's other, you know, it's a universe that you can make a nice flow chart of all these actors who jump into all these other things. You know what I notice isn't on here? And it's, maybe it's not a teen movie, but Vacation.
Yeah, more of a family movie. I think so. But your argument is good because A, it was written by John Hughes.
Yeah.
And B, it's mostly told from the dad's point of view.
Right.
But it is an early Anthony Michael Hall, and it was directed by Harold Ramis, who did make Caddyshack, which does in fact have a teen protagonist, and I do include in this book.
Yeah, because Caddyshack's not a teenage movie. I mean, he's one of a lot of main characters in that movie, but I mean
it. This could be BS on my part to make it fit.
No, but I wanted it to fit in the book, so it really worked in my realm.
No, it actually works because there's a chapter in the book on 80s teen sports movies. And Caddyshack is in a league with Better Off Dead and One Crazy Summer as a sort of surreal comedic sports movie. Movies where sports are putatively what the movie is about, but really it's this cracked mirror view of the world where everything is on tilt.
There's some movies where it really is sports, All the Right Moves, and Breaking Away, I would say.
Breaking Away, I think, is the first 80s teen movie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
is that really?
It's the first one where the characters are where the lead characters are all teenagers, and where it's completely told from their point of view, where it's their story and they're central to it, and they don't stand for anything. They're not representative of their generation or something political or social. They're just four people who just graduated from high school.
Interesting. Footloose is just a great movie that stands the test of time. It's one of the few I think I see in here that has been remade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Although
Dirty Dancing had a sort of sequel, but they didn't remake the original.
No, but I would say at least a half a dozen of these are in development. Taylor Lautner.
Seriously?
Yeah, Taylor Lautner has been trying to remake Vision Quest for like 5 or 6 years.
I don't want that remake.
Yeah, no,
Vision Quest stands the test of time.
Feels unnecessary, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yeah, I think if you I every 3 months or so, BuzzFeed comes out with an article saying these 80s classics are about to be remade, and a lot of these the names of the movies I feature in this book make the rounds.
312-981-7200 if you have a question or a comment on one of your favorite 80s movies. Do they fit what Kevin is talking about here? He's studied a lot of them. He knows a lot of them. How did you get so involved in doing this? You tell a story at the beginning of the book about traveling out west to a set you wanted to see where the movie Back to the Future was shot. You wanted to see the town, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You were hoping you'd get to the actual town because you thought, there's no way they built this. This is a big, real city.
Mm-hmm.
And you were brought to reality pretty quickly, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was 12 years old. I'm from here in the Midwest. I'd never been west of Chicago before. And then I had an opportunity to go to Universal Studios. And Universal was the studio behind Back to the Future, which I had seen 16 times yeah. in the theater by then. And I figured someone had to know where Hill Valley was.
What year was this?
This was 85.
Year of the movie, or
yeah.
was it a year later?
No, it was the year of the movie.
And you got a chance to go out there.
Yeah, December of 85.
And I'm sorry, you said you saw it 16 times in yeah. the theater, Back to the Future.
Yeah, with a kid's allowance of stolen quarters and scrounged dollar bills.
Why did you love Back to the Future that much?
I don't think it was because, I grew up near Detroit, and so the auto industry was a huge presence in my childhood.
Okay.
And every kid in my grade school's favorite car was a DeLorean.
Okay.
And I couldn't believe there was a whole movie featuring a DeLorean. That was a big part of it. I also thought Marty McFly was super cool. Like, I had a stupid looking red or orange vest like that, and I couldn't pull it off the way he could. And I think the best summary of it is like the third line in the book where I say, if I ever met Marty McFly, I'd want to say, someday I'm going to have a pretty girlfriend and a weird scientist as a best friend. And I'm going to be in a band and drive a cool car
yeah.
and I'm going to be just like you.
So you wanted to be Marty McFly.
Yeah, I think
okay.
so.
So you get to go visit a friend out in California mm-hmm. around Christmas time. You've seen the movie 16 times. You
yeah.
get to go on the tour. And then you're asking the tour guide, okay, but where's the real town at? Where did they shoot that at?
Yeah, yeah, because I'd seen Entertainment Tonight, and I understood they had these things called sound stages, but
right.
I'm like, can't fit a whole town in a sound stage.
Yeah.
The town felt so real to me. I'm like, it's got to be somewhere. They had to have modeled it on something. And I think I was just naive. I had cousins who lived in Santa Cruz. I could have asked them where Hill Valley was, and they would have
yeah.
straightened me out. But I said to the tour guide, so where's Hill Valley? And he just jerked his thumb over his shoulder and pointed at the mock-up of the clock tower there on the Universal Studios lot. And I said, well, where's the rest of it?
Yeah.
And he goes, no, we shot the whole thing right here. And I'm looking around and I see like the Universal Studios office building and people going to lunch and people pulling their cars up.
Yeah.
And it's a workplace, you know. And I was crushed because that was the only reason I had gone. I didn't care about Jaws. I didn't know what the Bates Motel was. All the other stuff on the Universal tour, I was just crushed. And in one of those wonderful turns of fate, my depression lasted exactly 24 hours because the next day I hooked up with my friend from summer camp who lived in Pasadena, and he said, do you want to visit Doc Brown's house? And I was like, oh God, not this again. I was like thinking Doc Brown's house is a pile of lumber somewhere
yeah.
on that stupid tour I took
yeah.
the day before. And he goes, no, we're going to go see Doc Brown's house. And he gives me a bicycle, and we ride over right where the 134 and the 720 freeway intersect, and there's the historic Gamble House, which is what they used for Doc Brown's house. And there on the lawn, you know, I stood at the base of the gently sloping hill. He stood at the top, and he stormed down the hill, and he went, so tell me, future boy, who's president in 1985? And I got to be Marty, and it was the first time in my life, because movies weren't filmed in Ann Arbor, Michigan
right.
in 1985.
Right.
It was the first time in my life I'd ever stood somewhere where a beloved movie had been filmed. And that, you know, obviously I wasn't thinking about writing a book about it then.
Right.
But that anecdote is where that notion first
brings
comes
you
from
here
me.
Today.
Yeah, yeah.
312-981-7200. Your favorite teen movie from the 80s or a movie you want to talk about with Kevin? He's the author of Brat Pack America, A Love Letter to 80s Teen Movies. We'll talk about what the best and the worst ones are next. 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Justin Kaufman. Kevin Smokler is sitting with us. He's the author of Brat Pack America, Love Letter to 80s Teen Movies. He's going to be appearing at the Bookseller in Lincoln Square on Saturday night at 6. And then on Tuesday, he'll be part of the Tuesday Funk reading series at the Hop Leaf in Andersonville. That's this Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. Will you read from the book? When you do a reading, you read from the book?
Yeah, but it'll be kind of a riff on the opening of the book. It won't be a word for word.
Talk about your discovering of movies and the locations and how real and not real it is.
Yeah, exactly.
So Texter asked if Back to the Future is a remake candidate.
I haven't heard officially that it's a remake candidate, but there's a great book also written about the 80s called Life Moves Pretty Fast that came out earlier this year. And the author's theory was that if they remade Back to the Future because of the sort of change in focus of pop entertainment that these movies brought on. Now, everything in pop entertainment or much of it is focused on young people. Mm-hmm. Back to the Future is really a movie about the parents, and Marty is the catalyst for how it all happens. But the people who change in that movie are the parents.
Right.
And so the question is, would Back to the Future today even include the parents? Or would it just be 17-year-old Marty McFly saves the world via DeLorean and his scientist friend?
Would you be really hurt if they remade that? Because when you have and you saw it 16 times, I don't know how it's held up for you over the years, but when you have a movie that's really like, that's my movie, I would hate to think of like it being remade and then changed and different, because when you love something so much, you want it to stay the same.
Yeah, but it is the same. You know, a remake might be called Back to the Future and it might have the same plot, but it's not the same thing any more than a movie adaptation of a novel is not the same thing, or someone covering your favorite song.
Sure, it's not the same thing, but still, now that it's like somebody else trying to imitate it, and you're like, yeah, but that's not it. I'd be defensive about it. I'd be mad about it.
I've had 30 years with it. I try
you're
not to
okay.
be. Yeah,
if
I try not to
remade,
be.
You'll enjoy the ride and say, okay, you know,
I don't
like
think I'll watch it.
You wouldn't watch it.
No, but I'm not going to slap someone on the wrist for remaking it either.
Well, you're slapping them on the wrist by not giving them your $10, I think. A texter asked, now this is a great question. What about Stand By Me? Teenagers, dealing with teenage angst, 30-year anniversary this year.
Yeah.
How in the world does that not make your list?
It's in there.
It is in there?
It is in there. Okay. It's in the second to last chapter. Look if you're checking
I'm
the map.
I'm just looking at the map. There's a map at the front of the book.
Yeah, look at Oregon. See where it says Castle Rock?
Yeah.
Castle Rock was the name of the town in Stand By Me.
But why isn't the movie listed?
Because since it's a map, I thought it would be fun to refer to the towns.
Okay. So when you refer to the towns, we're still saying, and that movie.
Yeah,
okay.
Stand By Me is definitely in here, especially because the town where Stand By Me is filmed, which is Brownsville, Oregon, does an annual celebration with drag races and pie-eating contests. And they did a huge one this year for the 30th, obviously.
I actually think we have an engineer here, Pete. I think Krista Flores, one of our engineers upstairs, I think she's gone to that festival and taken pictures of the town and put them up on her Facebook. I think she's a huge fan of that and has actually gone to that before. I'm pretty sure of that. I'm not 100% sure. But I remember that people do that, and that's pretty cool. So they have a festival still every year.
Yeah, every year since 2010. Yeah, since 2010 they've had a Stand By Me Day.
The Hollywood Reporter, Vanity Fair, somebody did an oral history of that movie this year. Did you see it?
No, I didn't see it.
You have to look it up. It's great because it talks about how that movie almost didn't get made, how the studio got sold right before they went to theater, and it almost had the plug was getting pulled. I think Norman Lear put up the $8 million to actually get it out in theaters and finish it off and stuff. It's a great story.
Oh, my God. I got to check that out.
All right. So if you have one movie, we'll do this after the news. One movie from the 80s that you'll take with you for the rest of your life. You're going to be stuck somewhere, whatever. There'll be no new movies, no more old movies, just one movie from the 80s only. What would you take with you for the rest of your life? We'll ask you that after the news. I just want to give you some time to think about that.
Okay.
A couple of calls here at 312-981-7200. Adam, you're on 720 WGN. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
We're good.
Hey, Adam.
Hey.
What did you want to say, Adam?
I thought of two 80s movies, but really quick, I wanted to comment on Back to the Future. That is like me and one of my friends, Steve, it's our all-time favorite trilogy. You know, we even the third one, you know, we still quote that. but you know, even though I know the first one's the best one, the second one, I don't know why, that's my favorite one.
It's really a lot of fun. I mean, the Ronald Reagan Cafe,
Yeah, oh my gosh, yeah, we always quote that. We always, whenever we're going to go eat somewhere, we always say, you know, like, beep, beep, beep for pork, you know.
Yeah.
But I even remember one time we were boogie boarding, you know, like in the back of a boat, and I flew off, you know, I just biffed and just flew right to the, you know, and I remember him saying that quote. Remember when the second one, when he's trying to go across the water, and my friend Steve yells out, you know, those boars don't go on water unless you've got power. And then he even did the cackle afterwards. And me and him thought it was hilarious. Nobody else laughed.
It is one of the most quotable movies of all time.
Oh, my gosh. We quote it. That's like our most quotable movie ever, me and one of my friends. But anyways, Yeah, so Back to the Future. If they remade that, I think I'd be upset because, I mean, you can't remake that. You know, yeah. It's like too much of a classic.
Absolutely. It's part of your childhood, and you have to hold on to pieces of your childhood for whatever they are. People remake it. I mean, if somebody was deathly in love with Footloose, I think they'd have to be a little annoyed by the fact that, and we saw the remake, and I thought it was okay and everything, but there's a moment in time where those movies come out, and it takes you back to that moment in time. And then I feel like when you remake it and change it, now you're like, well, it's fine, it's whatever, I've had it for 30 years, but I think you should fight against it. I think you should start a letter writing campaign. Nobody could replace Michael J. Fox.
This is the funny thing. There are 17 movies from the 1980s that are in the Library of Congress's National Film Registry.
Really?
Which means, according to the Library of Congress, Back to the Future and Stand and Deliver and Fast Times at Ridgemont High are as important to this country as The Wizard of Oz and Casablanca. And no other decade has more than two. So I figure there's a good percentage of teen movies from that decade that are going to be taken care of by our culture for all time.
There's a lot of people in their 40s and 50s working at the National Register of Historic Places right now, I think is what's going on. Quick break in the news and then more of your calls and more speaking with Kevin Smokler about Brat Pack America, 312-981-7200. Mampu Bala with you on 720. WGN. Who can't in their mind see the bus or what pulls away that reveals him? Is it a bus?
This is the music from when Jake Ryan pulls up to the
church. I know.
Church.
This is the end.
Yeah.
She comes out of the house.
No, the church.
That's
in Glencoe.
It is the church.
Yeah.
Okay. So the limo pulls away.
Right. The wedding limo pulls away. And
she walks back out. Everybody leaves just like normal.
Right.
And then he's sitting on the hood of his Porsche.
Yeah.
Waiting for.
Yeah.
His preppy little outfit.
Standing jauntily against the back bumper.
Is he standing against? I thought he was sitting on it for some reason.
I'm not sure. Do you know that song is a Thompson Twins song? Like,
that doesn't stun me.
It doesn't stun me, but it's like.
Seems like a Thompson Twins song.
Oh, but it's not. But it's not Hold Me Now. It wasn't like the one that shows up on the 80s compilation.
Yeah. Was that just one of their songs or did they make that for the film?
No, I think that was like one of those deep cut B-sides that John Hughes liked to stick on his movie soundtracks. Yeah,
but I just see that, and I don't even love that movie
that much.
I mean, there's very funny scenes in that movie.
Yeah.
What else is in that movie? Who's in that movie with her and Jay? Oh, that's Anthony Michael Hall.
Anthony Michael Hall and John Cusack in a really early role and his sister in an early role.
Joan Cusack. Yeah, she's in the she's got the apparatus on during that movie.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Paul Dooley playing her dad in one of the best dad performances of the 1980s.
Oh yeah.
Before
she
after
had to sleep
he was
on the couch.
Yeah, after he was the dad in Breaking Away.
Wow. Yeah, he had a good career.
Yeah. Yeah. He.
It's so funny how a piece of music can just take you to one of those moments. That's why you can't remake Back to the Future.
Yeah.
It's like you went back to that moment. You don't want it distorted by all these other movies being remade. Okay, 773 texts. Risky Business.
Oh, what a great movie.
Is that in here?
It's funny. I had that in a chapter that I had to cut. You're looking at me funny.
Because why?
That chapter had three movies. The chapter was completely self-contained and it had three movies that didn't speak to anything else in the book. So it could be cut.
Okay. But Risky Business and what were the other two?
Risky Business. In that chapter was Risky Business, Adventures in Babysitting, and a little-known Anthony Michael Hall movie called Out of Bounds.
Ain't nobody leave this club without singing the blues.
Yeah.
That's Adventures in Babysitting,
That's
right?
Adventures in Babysitting.
Which they just remade into a Disney TV show.
Oh, my God. And that movie, like, I always think of that as a Chicago movie.
Yes. That is such a Chicago movie.
Even though it was half filmed in Toronto, that blues
sure
bars in Toronto.
But, and I don't care about that. But they're on top of what was, at the time, the Stone Container Building.
Right.
So I love whenever there's a movie I can show my kids that shows, it's not old Chicago, but to me, it's old Chicago. It's before a lot of things changed in the 80s. And so I love that about that movie, that it really shows them driving around in Chicago.
Yeah, and that... What is it, the Cranes Communication Building now?
That triangle building?
Yeah.
I have no idea what it's called.
Yeah, but for all intents and purposes, it's the Adventures in Babysitting building.
Yeah, it is to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And by the way, handy little tip for everybody. If you're going to sit down and you think, oh my God, Adventures in Babysitting, then let's show that to the kids. Our kids were eight, our triplets, when we started showing that and didn't realize that they start dropping the F-bomb like crazy
in
that movie at a couple points.
And it's incredibly racist.
Might want... Oh, it is?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, I didn't remember. Oh, just because they're all scared of black people and they're going downtown? Yeah,
that whole movie is about, like, don't be in the city at night because that's where the non-white people come out.
Oh. Well, I think the producers would probably argue with you. They say, no, it's just the city's dangerous. The suburbs are safe. Okay, all right. Yeah, maybe you got a point there. But But it was the 80s.
Yeah. The funny thing is, if you compare that movie to a teen movie now, like take like Perks of Being a Wallflower,
yeah,
which ends with this magical scene of them driving through this tunnel into downtown Pittsburgh, mm-hmm, and the music swells and it's like, this is the greatest time of your life. And the very last thing you see is the skyline of Pittsburgh, as if the movie is saying you will live out your future in Pittsburgh, which, mm-hmm, which is awesome. But it's totally the opposite of Adventures in Babysitting, which is like, get the hell out of get the hell away from,
stay away from the cities
as quickly as you can. Yeah,
it's much safer out there. So Adventures in Babysitting, and then an Anthony Michael Hall movie called what?
Out of Bounds.
Out of Bounds. And what was that?
Anthony Michael Hall is a farm boy from Iowa, goes to visit his brother who lives in Los Angeles, picks up the wrong suitcase or duffel bag at the airport, which is filled with heroin, and takes it home to his brother's house where he's staying, and his brother ends up getting killed in a – I'm not spoiling anything. That's the first 9 minutes of the movie. In a scuffle with the people looking for the sack of drugs, and he has to get rid of the sack of drugs and save his life.
Interesting. Okay, so now we've been talking off and on air about your kind of parameters for this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a love letter to 80s teen movies. So yeah, like you said, it didn't relate to anything else, so we cut out. Or it really wasn't about teens. Like there was one, I forget what you said, that wasn't really about teens, so we didn't use it. But then you have Animal House in there.
Yeah.
And those aren't, well, I guess some of them are teenagers, but they're in college, and it's pretty adult-oriented. So how do you fit Animal House into this?
So the first chapter of the book is called Before, and it's six movies that are the older brothers and sisters to the 80s teen movie, and one of them is Animal House.
Okay.
Not only because Animal House changes the geography of movies at that time. Animal House was filmed in Eugene, Oregon, on the campus of the University of Oregon.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was.
They must love that at the University of Oregon.
Oh yeah, yeah. That and The Simpsons. Those are the big things that the University of Oregon, pop culture wise, talks about a lot.
Why The Simpsons?
Moe's is based on a bar in downtown Eugene.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. And even though Matt Groening has denied it, there is a statue of Eugene Skinner, the founder of Eugene, in the center of campus, you know, on his knees, pointing his finger up like Jebediah Springfield.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And so that and Nike, that's the, you know, that,
yeah.
But Animal House sort of shakes up the geography of young people movies at the time in the 70s, which were mostly filmed in New York and California.
Mm-hmm.
And Animal House is the beginning of that, of those, let's stick it to the man and the establishment by working on a kooky project together.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads us into Real Genius and Better Off Dead and a whole host of movies that came in the decades afterwards.
Hmm.
So that I think, and of course, you know, we don't have Caddyshack without Animal House. We certainly later don't have the Hangover movies. We don't have Superbad or American Pie. I mean, comedically, it is hard to get around the sort of anarchic grossness of Animal House.
So it opened up a raunchiness in comedy that wasn't there before and allowed us to get further and further.
A raunchiness that was seen as political and social rebellion.
Mm.
You know, we can being gross is a way of not playing by the rules.
Interesting. Interesting.
It was a notion ahead of its time, but it became a very 80s notion when we lived in a putatively conservative social culture.
Okay. 312-981-7200. What's your favorite 80s movie? And so, Kevin, I've been asking you off the air to prepare for this. So tomorrow you're going to get stranded somewhere for the rest of your life. I'm sorry to tell you that. But you get to bring one movie with you from the 80s that will be the only movie that you see now for the rest of your life.
Okay.
What would you bring with you?
I have chosen Better Off Dead.
Better Off Dead. Remind me, Better Off Dead, because I don't see that one.
Better Off Dead was John Cusack's first movie.
Okay. Is this I Want My $2?
Yes.
Okay. I remember that. Isn't that – there it
yeah,
is.
Yeah,
yeah. Which movie? I Want My $2!
It may as well be called I Want My $2.
It could have been.
Yeah. And based on the scenario you gave, I'm like, I need a movie I can see 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
And Better Off Dead is so ridiculously joke dense. Like you start naming all of the – ridiculous, brilliant comedic turns in that movie.
Yeah.
And then pretty soon you're out of breath and you can't believe the movie's only 97 minutes long.
All right. Is Better Off Dead also Kickboxing, Sport of the Future?
No, that's Say Anything.
Say Anything. And what is Fresh Breath is a Priority of My Life? Does that also
Fresh
Say Anything?
Breath is a Priority.
It's one of those two.
It is. I think it's Say Anything. I don't think it's Better Off Dead. Better Off Dead is Curtis Armstrong, who played the best friend in every one of those movies. It's when he decides that you could sell the snow on a ski mountain as cocaine and make a fortune, where he picks up the snow and sniffs it and goes, do you believe the street value of this mountain?
By the way, Pete just corrected me. I'm sorry. Fresh Breath is Priority of My Life. It was, of course, Anthony Michael Hall, I believe, in 16
Candles. In 16 Candles. Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
right.
I had that completely wrong.
Fresh Breath is Priority of My
Life. I swear, there's something else John Cusack says at a table, but maybe it's just Kickboxing Sport of the Future.
Kickboxing Sport of the Future? I can tell by your face. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So for me, and we'll make this a little prize. If somebody can call, because I gave this quote to Kevin off the air, and he couldn't name the movie, which stunned
me. Ambushed me with it when I walked in here.
I thought, Kevin will know this right away, and he didn't. So I'm going to say this, and if somebody gets it right, if somebody calls real quick and gets it right, and don't look it up, don't be cheating at home, you get a Lumel 90s gift certificate. So my movie that I would take with me forever, because I watched it so many times back then, and I'm sure people would say it doesn't hold up, blah, blah, blah. It's a movie that actually has been remade. But the phrase that I remember very well from it is, guy's telling a story, and the other guy says, well, is she a pro? And he says, well, at this point, we don't know. And then he keeps telling the story. Is she a pro? Well, at this point, we don't know. And you don't know what that's from, Kevin.
I think I just got it.
Okay. Well, you hold on to that.
Okay.
Let's see if a caller gets it. 312-981-7200. Tell me what that is for a Lou Malnati's Pizza next on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Justin Kaufman here on the Down Low. Justin's filling in for Steve Cochran tomorrow morning. You'll hear him at 6 a.m. here on 720 WGN. A few more minutes with Kevin Smokler. The book is Brat Pack America, A Love Letter to 80s Teen Movies. He'll be appearing this Saturday at Bookseller in Lincoln Square at 6 o'clock. And on Tuesday, he'll be part of the Funk Reading Series at the Hop Leaf in Andersonville. That's Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. As we headed into break, I stumped Kevin on a quote from a movie, one of my favorite movies from the 80s.
Completely.
When I said, is she a pro? Well, at this point, we don't know. But I think Missy knows what that movie is. Hey, Missy, you're on 720 WGN. How are you?
Hey, great.
When I said that, did you know it or did you look it up? Just tell me.
I knew it immediately.
You did.
Favorite movie.
What is the movie?
About Last Night.
About Last Night with Rob Lowe and Demi Moore. And and Jim Belushi, for God's sakes, who I don't love at all. But in that movie, and I used to know, Missy, could you recite a lot of that movie back in the day?
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely. I used one of the songs from that movie for my wedding. So, I can recite
Oh, my God. Which one?
Living Inside My Heart.
Of course, yeah.
Bob Seger.
Yeah.
Right?
Bob Seger.
It was a good soundtrack to that movie.
Great soundtrack.
They're on a rooftop at a Cubs game before that's when it's just rooftops. It's not it's not corporations.
Right.
It's just people hanging out on a rooftop. I mean, that's what I love about it. You can go back and see some of old Chicago in that.
Mm-hmm.
Missy, when's the last time you watched About Last Night?
Oh, my gosh. Probably 10 years ago.
I know. Me too. And it was just remade. I think loosely remade.
Yeah.
With Kevin Hart and I think an all-black cast.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if they stuck to the script or how much they changed it. I didn't see it, but
I couldn't even watch it.
It was one
I
of those.
I couldn't even watch it.
Because you can't change what you remember, right, Missy? That's why they can't remake Back to the Future. They can't change your childhood, Missy. All right, you're going to get a Lou Malnati's pizza, okay? You hold on for Pete to get your information. Thank you so much, Missy.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Missy. Have a great night. About Last Night. Now, About Last Night. They're not teenagers. That's not a teen movie. Now, some of the Brat Pack is in that movie because Rob Lowe and Demi Moore are in it.
Yeah, and I had this is just me letting my imagination run away with myself, but I feel like the kids in the Breakfast Club are, you know, kids that the school's in Des Plaines. I feel like when those kids grow up and become young professionals, they become the people in About Last Night.
Okay. Okay. Now, neither Rob Lowe nor Demi Moore are in the Breakfast Club.
But I think About
Last... But they knew those kids.
Yeah. I think About Last Night is a movie about young professionals living in Chicago.
It is, yes.
And Chicago is definitely a place where people emigrate from the outside to the inside.
Right.
I feel like those... And those movies come out within a year of each other.
Uh-huh.
I feel like John Hughes is giving us a glimpse as to what's happening in the North Suburbs. And About Last Night is what's happening further south on the train.
But John Hughes didn't make About Last Night.
No.
Right? And it's actually based on the play Sexual Perversity in Chicago.
Right. And made by Ed Zwick, another Chicagoan.
Yeah. So. Okay. All right. So did your editor have these conversations with you and you had to find your defenses for all these?
Yeah.
Well, this doesn't fit at all, Kevin. No. Bear with me. It really does.
Over and over again. Yeah.
The kids from the Breakfast Club, they knew these kids. And that's what they grew up. No, it fits. Don't worry. It all makes sense.
You spend enough time with it and you start to think these people all live in the same universe. Like, And if you see a face show up in two or three different movies, you start to say, well, did that person just wander from this movie universe? To the, I know in comic books and sci-fi, we call that world continuity or something.
Right.
But you, if you...
Well, there's theories that like every Pixar movie is somehow in the same universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Things like that. So we've talked about the remakes of movies.
Mm-hmm.
Is there one of these movies where you'd like to see, like you talked about, well, those are the Breakfast Club type kids grown up and moving into the city. Mm-hmm. So now, would they be in their mid-40s, early 50s? Is there one of these movies you'd like to see? Like Twin Peaks is coming out next year.
Yeah.
And it's going to be 26, 25 years later
uh-huh.
in the show. They're going to actually move forward mm-hmm. and here's what happens next. If you could pick one or two of these, what would you like to see now with them older and what they're doing? Like, is there any characters and setting that you'd like to revisit and see where they are?
So if you did The Breakfast Club now,
mm-hmm.
it's effectively The Big Chill. It's effectively a bunch of people who knew each other in young life getting together in middle-aged life.
Mm.
The Big Chill came out at this time, and The Big Chill, of course, was about, you know, the hangover from the 60s and waking up from it here in the 80s.
Yeah.
It would be very interesting to see that those sort of parameters of time moved forward for our generation and people even younger than us, and to say, well, what was it like to be, what would it be like to have been 18 in 1985 and then to have a sort of impromptu high school reunion in your mid-40s?
Yeah.
Or maybe it's like a social experiment. Like, what if the Breakfast Club contacts each other in 2016, says, let's hang out for a day and see what happens?
Yeah. That would be, I mean, is that the movie you'd choose then, The Breakfast
Club?
Off
the top of my head, yeah.
I'd like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I'd like to see, although I don't think it would be good. I think we'd be like, oh, God, that's a shame.
I don't think
didn't turn out well for all of them.
No, but I don't think they need to take a day off, because I think that the happiest part about Ferris Bueller is if you flash forward like if you flash forward 8 months in that movie, Ferris and Sloan probably don't stay together.
Yeah,
when
well,
everybody...
they as much acknowledge it in the movies.
Right, exactly.
I mean, he says this won't work.
But the there's a pretty high likelihood that those three people stay friends for the rest of their lives.
Yeah,
so it would be really interesting to see their friendship in middle age.
Get together?
Yeah.
But it'd be The Outsiders. I mean, I guess that ended tragically for a few of them. So
that
probably wouldn't turn out well. Is there any other movie where you'd like to see them, like Fast Times at Ridgemont High? I'd like to see Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I wonder if like the little predictions that Amy Heckerling and Cameron Crowe put at the end of that movie.
That's right. They did that, right?
It would be interesting to see
some of
them.
Animal House.
Yeah.
A few of those movies have mm-hmm. those already in them. It's pretty cool. It's a fun book. So was it, you mentioned a few different films that you had to cut out. Mm-hmm. Was there one that you cut out that you're like, God, I really want to put this in, but I'm saving it for another book, or I'll do something else with this?
I couldn't find a place to put Red Dawn. Mm. I mean, even though I'm not a huge fan of that movie, but it's definitely of this time, and it's a lot of people's favorite movies from this time. I just couldn't find a place to put it.
Red Dawn is that the one in Michigan where the Soviets drop in by parachute?
Yeah, but it's Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
Wait. No. It is?
Yeah.
Wait. Am I thinking of the right movie? It was just remade not that long
mm-hmm.
ago, right? Okay, that is Red Dawn.
Yeah.
Why did I think that was set in Michigan?
I don't know.
I guess because they scream Wolverine,
yeah.
right? So I think of Michigan always when I hear that. I do.
That's
that was set in Albuquerque?
Yeah, Albuquerque, yeah.
Wow, I guess I haven't seen that in a while.
So I just couldn't find a place to put that. And I mean, I would have loved to have kept the chapter with Risky Business. I had to cut a whole chapter about horror movies. I was pretty sad because, you know, when you think of 80s
of teen
and teens, you do
picks.
Think
yeah.
you do think of teen slasher picks. I had to cut a whole chapter about malls because of the 80s mall movie.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the zenith of the American mall during that decade. But everything in that chapter was repeated elsewhere. So
interesting.
So it couldn't stay. So.
Save it for another book.
Yeah.
Kevin Smolkler will be at Bookseller in Lincoln Square on Saturday at 6, and then Tuesday he'll be part of the Tuesday Funk Reading Series at the Hop Leaf. That's on October 4th at 7:30 in Andersonville. The book is called Brat Pack America, Love Letter to 80s Teen Movies. It's been fun. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome, Matt. This was great.
News is next on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Justin Kaufman here on Radio 720 WGN. As we mentioned, Justin's filling in tomorrow morning. for Steve Cochran. So you'll hear him there tomorrow morning. Joining us in studio right now is Dr. Willie Wilson. There was a great story at DNAinfo.com today by Sam Chalky talking about Dr. Willie Wilson and that he wants to bail out 100 people for Thanksgiving. Thanks for coming in, Dr. Wilson. I appreciate seeing you.
Thank you for having us.
So the story goes on DNAinfo.com that a lot of people end up in jail because, you know, they get arrested for whatever. But if it's a minor crime or a nonviolent crime, sometimes they don't have $100 or $200 to make bail. And so it says in the story that some people end up waiting for their court date for a couple of years in jail because they can't afford a couple hundred dollars bail. Or alternatively, also, if you make bail, you need to tell them where you're going to be. They want to, you know, you have a court date coming up. They need to know exactly where you're going. So if you were homeless at the time or don't have friends or family members or home to say, here's where I'll be, then they won't release you either, correct?
Well, from my understanding, this here, and I started this whole situation because I came up poor, you know, and I had two sons that spent time in Cook County Jail. When they came out, they was different.
Changed
real rough, like, all right. So one of my kids in jail, he's still alive, but one of them got killed to drug, and so I'm very sensitive to those type of situation. So I figured, look, maybe I can help save somebody without going in there, get them out right quick, for misdemeanor only,
right,
and then get them out. So what we did, we went last week and we gotten out a couple weeks ago, we gotten out a few people. Thanksgiving Day, we raised $100,000. I put $50,000 of my own money in it, and we're gonna try to get out over 100 or 200 people for Thanksgiving Day,
which is which sounds wonderful and sounds noble. So when and you've been speaking with Sheriff Dart about identifying the types of people in jail that would be a good fit for this program?
That's correct. We worked with Sheriff Dart. We met with him on yesterday, matter of fact. And his staff, Dr. Smith, they gave us a list. We go through them. We look for the ones that were light crime, nonviolent crime.
What type of crimes are we talking about that would be a nonviolent crime that maybe would fit this?
Well, somebody might have been sleeping in somebody's property. Somebody might have been went to a store hungry, stealing some bread or something like that. Somebody might have been on the corner. Maybe they might have had an ounce of marijuana or anything like that, right? Those type of situation there. Or somebody didn't pay the parking ticket.
Right.
You know, so that doesn't deserve for them to be in that for 6 months or a year or longer.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, but they don't have $100 to get out. And what we did the other day when we got the people out, didn't have money to get out, but we paid some $500, $1,000, $200, $150 to get them out.
Okay.
But afterward, we gave them each $200 a piece so they could have some type of money.
Yeah, so they're not possibly going right back to committing a crime because now I'm back on the street and I don't have money, I don't have food, and and I'm desperate.
Right. But we also met yesterday with about 50 pastors, ministers of different churches in the area. Now, understand, it's not just a African-American situation. We bail out white, black, Spanish, Indian, Asian, et cetera. We're not looking at color or anything like that, although the majority of them in there is, you know, minority.
Right.
You know, but we get out both. It doesn't matter. I'm looking at this from a human being.
Sure.
You know, and so we're going to continue to do it. It's not just a one-time deal, not just a Thanksgiving situation. We're going to put a line item in our profit and loss statement. Each month, we'll add to that. If they get in jail and they make a court date, if they make the court date, we get 90% of that money come back.
Right.
But we won't take it. We'll just add to it, recycle
put
it back
in the fund.
In the funds. Right.
And how much concern do you have over that? I know that you're seeing kind of who they are and learning a little bit about the crime that they committed. But the one downfall, the one way I could see this going badly for you is somebody, you help them make bond and then they commit another crime or a crime that ends up being violent or something like that. So I know it's more than just get them out of jail. You're giving them a little money, trying to help them not only if they need a place to stay, have a place to stay, get a job or get into a GED program, right?
That's correct. But see, I believe that everybody deserves a second chance.
Sure.
Yeah. These are lightweight, nonviolent, you know, crime.
Right.
Now, none of it can control human type of situation.
Sure.
you know, you or I could go out here and anything could happen to us,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So, but we believe if they stayed in that, they don't have a chance.
Right.
You know, and so if I was in jail and didn't have any money, and somebody came along and got me out, then I would be very grateful to that person. Now, one of the guys got the other day, the first time he had been in jail, mm-hmm. he got out, he said, well, I went to jail, got in jail last night, I prayed all night that somebody would get me out. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, somebody was touching him and got him out. And I said, that was the Lord touching you. So those kind of stories. And one of them had 5 kids and hadn't seen them in 3 weeks and had a job.
And what was he in jail for?
It was like property, you know. I was living in a property. Maybe didn't have a place to live, you know, and that type of situation. I went through the list. And we just pick them out.
Yeah.
Okay, because I didn't know who's who, you know, but just doing some good deeds and some good things.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more in there.
Do you meet with them first at all? Do you get a meeting with them and say, okay, here's what I'm going to do for you, but here's what I want you to promise me, because I'm going to give you an opportunity? Or do you just take your chance, they deserve a second chance, and I'm going to hope for the best?
We just take our chance. We work with the sheriff's office. Mm-hmm. We did get a chance to talk to them. As they came out for about 15 minutes, told them about my life story, mm-hmm. you know, that they can make it too.
Yeah.
You know, those type of things there. We offer help. We said, okay, we got a church in this area here. We had about, I think about 25 or 50 ministers there at the time. Mm-hmm. And each pastor was there. And we let them know what area the church is in. So they go there and somebody need food to eat. I asked the pastors to take and let me know, take care of it. And if that be the case, if they didn't have the money, I would send it to them.
Yeah.
And take care of it.
But what about a place to stay? If some of these people need a place to stay, are the mm-hmm. churches helping out with that? Or how, because they're not necessarily a place to stay at the church, how can they help out with that?
We'll line that up at SOFA.
Okay.
We're asking them to help us out. We're also working with the shelter mm-hmm. in Chicago. About a month ago, I was at the shelter on the west side, 1800 West Harrison. It was about 370 people there. And we went there and we gave them a gift card, like $40 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And they come in and out. So we're working with the shelter along with the churches and trying to make sure we can get some type of foundation set for them.
Yeah.
We don't have all the answers yet.
Sure.
You know. But we're working on it, and we think we're gonna get that. When I was running for mayor of the city of Chicago and president of the United States, I was talking about, you know, prison reform.
Yeah.
So instead of talking about it, get out and do something about it.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, you're putting your money where your mouth is, that's for sure. I don't know if that's reforming the prisons at all, but you're at least giving a second chance until the system gets corrected.
Right.
You're trying to do what you can do to mm-hmm. try to help out. You know, it's so interesting because we talk, you know, I do interviews for DNA Info, and so much of the stories in our neighborhoods, especially in certain neighborhoods in Chicago, mm-hmm. right now are about the shootings and about the police and about stop and frisk and should we be doing more and this and that. And so we have all these violent crimes being committed. And more than we've had in a long time, right? We're doubling from last year with the shootings and everything else. And yet we still have all these other people who are at risk, who are committing maybe a minor crime,
mm-hmm.
but are poor, and so they can't get out of jail. And, you know, we mentioned in the story somebody who maybe commits a very minor crime, and it's only like a $200 bond, but they don't have it, they can't get it.
Mm-hmm.
So they might sit in jail for up to 2 years
mm-hmm.
waiting for their trial. And you have to think that if you spend 2 years in jail, no matter how innocent you are, when mm-hmm. you come out of there, I would think, and I don't have any evidence to back this up, but that you are very likely to commit another crime because you just had to survive 2 years in a very rough time, right?
Well, rough time. And see, once you get these records on you, it's pretty tough because you can't get a job even after you know, in there for a while. So you come out of there, you got the record, you can't get a job. It's a tough situation, right? And we got to change it and everything. I believe it end up to be economic empowerment would take care of a lot of these issues.
Yeah.
You know, out here, but we certain neighborhood just doesn't get the dollars, the resources, as maybe like downtown in certain areas, you know, to help them to make it.
Yeah.
You know, but they can make it. we're going to set up a well, we have a website.
Let's take a quick break, and then I want to find out if people want to help out, because you put in $50,000 yourself, but you want to get to $100,000. You'd like people to match that $50,000. And I know that the pastors at this meeting yesterday threw in $5,000 right away.
Right.
But if our listeners want to help, I want to find out how they can do that too. 312-981-7200. Quick break. More with Dr. Willie Wilson next on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. Dr. Willie Wilson's in studio with us. He's got a program where he's trying to help minor offenders get out of jail. Guys who, and women, I imagine, but I'm guessing it's mostly guys,
right? Yeah, well, both, yeah.
Mostly. Mm-hmm. People who are in jail on minor crimes, nonviolent offenses, who can't afford the $100 or $200 to get out of jail and are going to sit there for a year or more, possibly waiting for a court date, which, as you can imagine, is only going to lead to a much tougher time for them to get out and get back on the right track when they can finally get free. If you want to donate to the cause, as we were saying before the break, Dr. Wilson has put up $50,000 of his own money, and he's reaching out to other people to help out with this. You'd like to raise $100,000 altogether to get at least 100 people out for Thanksgiving, and hopefully more. Mm-hmm. If you want to give, you can text 312-818-4975. The number is 312-818-4975. Text the word give, and then there'll be prompts to direct you along, and you can donate money. He thinks tomorrow the website should be up, drwilliewilsonfoundation.org, but to get any information from you at any time, just like you on Facebook, Willie Wilson, right? Find you on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Okay, we can do that. Let's talk a little bit. There's two Chicagos.
Yeah.
There's the Chicago here on the Magnificent Mile and River North and Lincoln Park and everywhere. And there's Inglewood and Woodlawn and all the other areas on the south side. I think it's really two Chicagos that we have here, because there's people living different lives than what I get to lead. And we talk a lot about stop and frisk is a big phrase right now after the debate, right? Mm-hmm. And the Chicago police made an agreement with the ACLU about a year ago, and they switched to these contact cards. The police were stopping thousands of people, just stopping and chatting with them, frisking them, doing whatever. And then the ACLU was going to sue, and there was going to be probably a settlement. So they made this agreement with the ACLU, switched to these contact cards, which are about 2 pages long. It's a lot of paperwork, up to a half an hour for a police officer after he stops someone. The incidences of police stopping people have dropped an insanely large amount. It's very different now. And so the ACLU would say, well, and we're protecting people's civil rights. They shouldn't just stop anybody they want at any time for no reason. There should be a reason for it. And which I think everybody on the surface can agree with. Since that change has been made, shootings have skyrocketed here in Chicago. Now, you could say, well, there's 18 different reasons, and that's probably true. But if it boiled down to, if we went back to this other way, and there's arguments against it. New York City, they switched, and shootings didn't go way up. So they'd say, no, it's not stop and frisk. That's not the deal. But here, you start thinking about all the things that have happened, and are the police getting less engaged where they need to be because of fears over fallout from how they handle their business or the paperwork or the ACLU or everything else. How do you think about how the police are handling things and how the community is handling things here in Chicago right now?
Well, listen, there's obvious some problems, some issues, right? My situation, my belief is this here. I still think it comes down to economic empowerment. Invest into certain neighborhood empowerment. People get jobs. People have money to feed their family, right?
Yeah.
A lot of this will go away. Now, let's say stop and frisk, okay? Stopping people for no reason at all on one side of the town, on the other side of the town, they don't do it. That's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Things haven't gotten any better, you know, because this violent contingent that goes on. The policemen, the announcements, we got cell phones and video, catch them and everything.
Sure.
They shooting people for the wrong reason and killing people for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
All right? Which been going on a long time. So the community continually to get upset and you continue to have these problems is not going to stop.
Right.
Right? The way you stop it, in my opinion, create economic empowerment, invest into those communities, you know, make them a lot better, right? Downtown Chicago, look, everything nice. No red light cameras downtown Chicago. You go outside, at least I haven't found one yet, all right?
I think I've got nailed by a couple, so they're here somewhere. They're
I'm in the downtown. I haven't found one downtown yet, all right? But you go on this side of town, that side of town, all right? Ticket. All right? They come to jail. What else they get? They don't pay for it because they ain't got the money. They get locked up, yeah, and they get put in jail. All right? Taxpayer got to, you know, pay their dollars. All right? Right? I'm now trying to help get them out.
Yeah.
It's a cycle that continually go round and round and round. All right? But then you got to be fair to all human beings. And then when communities see things like that, they react in a positive way.
Yeah.
Look, when I drive, I'll tell you something. Police stop me, I got concerns. You know?
Yeah.
Now, look, I think, look, I come downtown, live downtown, police look at me and stop me, I don't even move. Put my hands on my steering wheel, let's stay there, all right, until they ask questions very careful. But on the other side of town, they can stop, not too many questions, only if you run a red light or something.
Yeah.
You know? But so I think you got to be economic empowerment and fairness. Anybody can see that regardless of what color you are. There should never be two cities within one,
yeah,
and with different rules and regulation. You can never find anything right about that.
Let me ask you something. Mm-hmm. In a lot of the videos that we see, because you said you get pulled over, your hands are up on the wheel because you're concerned. You know that as a black man, things could go wrong quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfair. But that is life right now, right?
It is.
In a lot of the videos we see, it's wrong that the black men are getting shot, right? It mm-hmm. is. But they don't have their hands up. I mean, it's very it happens too, but in a lot of these we see where they're telling him stop, stop, and then they're going to the car or something's happening. This happens, I imagine, with white people too and other people, and maybe the cops aren't as quick to pull the trigger, but there needs to be more training for police. There also needs to be people need to, and maybe it's to the point where there's a lot of African-American men who feel like I'm really in danger here, so I'm not just going to stand like this because I'm afraid of what's going to happen. But do you see that too in these videos? I think a lot of people who feel bad for the cops in some instances, and the cops need better training. There's no doubt about that. There needs to be a lot done, but the people they are talking to aren't listening to what they're asking for, and that makes them nervous, and then they end up shooting. Now, that's no excuse for what happened to Laquan McDonald. That's
right.
Just on the other side of the world ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he had shot him once, there'd be arguments for, well, this is why this happened.
Mm-hmm.
Emptying your revolver is what boils everything over into what the hell is going on mm-hmm. here. Why did that have to happen? Well, it didn't have to happen. That's rogue insanity. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these instances, the police are at fault, bad training, bad cop, whatever in these instances. But you also wish that, why did that person go back to the truck? Why did they get back inside? Why didn't they just stand there and, you know, and let it play out?
Well, you know, look at this here. Police stopped me outside. Stopped the average African-American person.
Mm-hmm.
They're frightened.
Mm-hmm.
Right there. Because all those things that have not been reported, now finally caught on video.
Yeah.
We've been knowing this all along, we've been going through.
Yeah.
Right? So when you stop, it's just like you got a kid. If you took a kid, do something wrong, you're going to take and spank the kid going to go into panic.
Yeah.
The average African-American, not only in Chicago, but around the country, panic. Include me. Okay? But they're not doing it nowhere else. Right? Then also, the problem isn't that some of the politicians, some of the policing, are covered for wrongdoing. A lot of them haven't even been convicted.
Yeah.
You know? That's another issue within itself. You got bad police, white or black, and you got good white and black.
Sure.
We need police officers, but we need people who are going to follow the law and abide by the law and to be equal with the law.
Yeah.
And unless you do that, there are issues. And when I leave out here now, let me tell you what, if the police stop me here, or if they stop me on the south side, or anywhere I go, okay, there is concern right away. If I ran a red light, or if I didn't run a red light, you know.
You've got in the back of your mind, you're worried about this.
Right. So those things there, that we have to fix, especially when we see that some of the politicians and police get together and they always end up seeming to be right all the time.
Yeah. You've seen too many instances where you've seen the video and then they're not convicted. And you're like, wait a minute. I just watched that, right? What are we not seeing that everybody else is seeing?
Yeah. I mean, like, look.
The system seems rigged.
How many times you can shoot a person on the street 16 or 20 times and still figure they're not dead, all right? And then the other police officer saying they came out with a knife.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other police officer, including the mayor, don't want to release the video.
Yeah.
I mean, so what's what? But it's just Chicago, the rest of the world, rest of the country. You have to bring in and do something different.
Yeah.
Things continue to go up. The other thing with this, the budget was passed the other day, raised taxes. All these taxes that they raised, they hired, I believe it was 500 police officers, mm-hmm. and they done some other things. But none of the dollars was put into the inner city that got a problem for economic empowerment.
Well, you know what the problem is, Dr. Wilson, I would say is they're all great ideas. What you're saying, they're generational improvements.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. the mayor needs to get reelected in 2 years. So what's going to get him reelected? 500 more cops on the street, not 5 years from now, a factory is going to be built that's going to have 500 jobs, and we're going to put this money into education in the future. All people look at right now is what are the numbers right now? And mm-hmm. that's the tough part, I think, for politicians or anybody is everything you're talking about, let's put more money in, let's do that. That needs to be done, and that's going to help hopefully 10 years from now. They want to say what's going to happen tomorrow that's going to make this look better so that I can get reelected.
I agree with you what is taking place. This is an economic thing, but don't make it right, and the place won't ever get right until you decide to think and start doing things right. The person on the street who may not have education, who maybe be a bum, know when they're being treated right or wrong.
Yeah. Dr. Willie Wilson, he's putting his money where his mouth is, $50,000 in. You can help donate to help out some people get out of jail in time for Thanksgiving. I'll explain how you can do that right after the news. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. Thank you, Rob Martier. Matt Bubala in for Justin Kaufman tonight. Justin gets the big show in the morning. He's on 6 to 10 a.m. for Mr. Cochran. Joining us in studio right now, WGN Radio Sports' is Sam Haniotovich.
Hola.
How are you, Samuel?
I'm good.
How's the Friday night high school show going?
Everything's good. It's week 6 already. Can you believe that?
I can because none of my teams are doing that fabulous, so I'm kind of sad. Our Mount Carmel Caravan. So we lost to Loyola, number one ranked team. That's
by a touchdown.
Close game.
35-28.
And we're pressing at the end, right?
Right there. They actually threw a pass into the end zone that Loyola deflected, knocked to the ground, game over.
Yeah. But then the next week.
The one that stings is the Rita loss. You lose to Rita by a field goal. They kicked a field goal as time expired to beat Mount Carmel.
Yeah. So that was a rough one. So Mount Carmel's 3-2. 3-2?
Yep.
3-2.
So you win two more.
And out of the rankings, though, probably,
yep.
Right? Yeah, that's a shame. Our old friend Frank Lenny, still running things at Mount Carmel.
Yeah, still there.
Man.
He'll probably be there forever.
Is his brother Dave still there?
He's there.
Yeah.
Frank became the head coach, I believe, in 1985.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's 30-plus now.
He's in the national rankings. I think I saw a story like a week or two ago. Maybe you posted on Facebook. He's like 30th nationwide for wins or something like that.
I didn't post it, but I saw it.
Yeah.
Remember when Lou Holtz came in, tried to pull him out, bring him to Notre Dame? That was probably when you were at Carmel.
I saw Lou Holtz in the building at Mount Carmel.
They put their pants on the same way we do.
Yeah, I remember that very well because I was there 86 through 90.
That was 1989. Lou Holtz wanted to bring Frank Lenty to Notre Dame.
Did
Frank
he really?
Said no. Yes. Oh, of course.
I know he was in the building, but I didn't know if that was, you know, because you imagine high school coaches angling for something better. Why the hell didn't he go? I love that Frank's been at Mount Carmel forever. Thank God he was there for me, straightened my butt out before I left.
He wanted to coach his son.
Wow.
He waited 13 years.
And that happened. And
Frankie went to U of I. Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know all these stories.
But that's not why we're here.
That's not
is
why
it?
We're here. That's not why we're here to reminisce about old times. It's to talk about.
We're here to talk about the White Sox, right?
You and your Chicago White Sox. Are they still playing? Is there still a season?
They had a game today. Actually, yeah, they put uniforms on and everything. It was great.
Yeah.
They are losing 5-3 to the Rays.
They're playing that game right now because it is raining outside. They are playing, though.
Top of the eighth.
And what are you guessing on the attendance, actual attendance at that game tonight,
See,
Sam?
The funny thing
means
is.
Means nothing. It's pouring rain.
They announce the attendance in the seventh inning of every game.
And do they announce sales?
They don't announce who's there. They announce what was sold.
Sure.
So they'll announce probably 19, 20,000, which they do pretty much every night. Last night, there were probably 3,000 people there.
Wow. But you know what, though? The fact that 19,000 are sold is not that bad, considering, you know.
Which all that means is 16,000 people can't give it away.
Well, yeah, but you could say that, or you could say, hey, they've got a good base there. If they have 20,000 sold when nobody's coming, that's better than I would have thought.
Gotta win.
Because I always get upset at you guys and your fans that
gotta win. You
love
win.
Beating up the Cubs and Cubs fans, but then don't ever support your own team. If you're at least selling out half the stadium on season tickets, then that's not that bad.
Still gotta win.
Could be worse. Well, yeah, that would help.
But they don't have to win on the north side. They don't have to win to draw.
They don't. They don't, because we love our Cubs. We love our Wrigley Field. Not because it's a big beer, guys. That's all you care about. Cubs fans are very immersed in the game. When the Cubs suck, we boo them. When the Cubs are winning, we cheer them. I feel that's a false rap we've gotten over the years. That's just a beer garden. Nobody cares about the game. I don't feel that that's true. I feel you go to a game when they suck, there are fewer people there. Maybe they're drinking more, and maybe they're looking at all the pretty people, but they're booing when the Cubs play badly. I don't think it's we cheer for anything and we don't care.
Game was suspended tonight, by the way. They're in Pittsburgh. It's 1-1. It was in the sixth inning. They bonged it because of rain. Cubs have 101 wins.
Did you see the team the Cubs put on the field tonight to start that game?
Joe is just, he's going into his pocket, and he's rolling dice. And whatever it lands on, that's who plays.
Addison Russell was on the field. You didn't recognize five of the nine names. The other four, you know.
They get the Japanese guy in there playing second.
He was out there.
He's like bowing after a catch. Menonori Kawasaki is your Cubs second baseman.
Yeah, it sometimes looks like a sequel to Major Leagues when the Cubs are throwing this lineup out on the field.
And they still win.
Well, they didn't win last night, and Jake Arrieta was all upset.
Would you catch what he said, too? Because did you see what Joe Maddon did? He took out Miguel Montero, the catcher, in the fifth inning and brought in a new catcher.
Brought in Wilson Contreras.
And Jake said something after the game like, this was like a spring training game. Like, you know, pretty much, what are you doing, Joe Maddon? And Jake apologized today because I think somebody said something like, hey, you should probably not say that. You probably shouldn't second-guess Joe Maddon. But
Montero did the same thing.
Montero wasn't happy
either.
Right.
Which is fine, which I think is fine, and I bet Joe's even fine with that, saying, you know what, I want you guys pissed off. I want you guys to care enough that you're getting mad that I do this, but here's the deal. We got 3 days left. We're getting to the playoffs. Montero might not be your catcher, because you know what? We need somebody who can hit. So it might be Contreras. It might be somebody else. So get used to it and just live with it. But it's good that they're getting fired. I don't think it's, oh, my God, oh, no, the clubhouse. They're fired up. They're ready to go. I think that means something.
First of all, Montero's the catcher for Arrieta in the playoffs. Second of all, we're just finding things to talk about now because there's nothing to talk about because they've clinched the Central. They've clinched home field in the National League. There's nothing really else to talk about. We're just finding headlines to grab onto, and the whole Arrieta thing we grab onto.
Well, it's the only consternation they've had, and since when?
Just get me to next Friday. I'm ready for next Friday, October 7th, game one of the NLDS. We don't know who it's going to be. It could be the Cardinals, could be the Mets, could be the Giants. A couple options there.
You know,
just get me there.
We were talking about this earlier, but there was a great moment in time a few days ago where all three teams were basically tied. And have you ever seen the wild card scenario of three teams tie for the two wild card spots?
I don't think we've had a three-team tie.
I don't think we have had it.
I don't think that's been real. Pete, we had a two-team tie. We've had a couple two-team ties. In fact, one of them was in 2008 when the White Sox and Twins were tied for the Central. Remember?
Okay.
And then they had to play the extra game, the one game. That was when Ken Griffey threw his arm out from center field to throw out Michael Kadire at the plate. The Sox beat the Twins 1-0 in that blackout game.
Okay.
You had a couple.
Tomy home run, right?
Yeah, the Tomy hit one that hasn't landed yet off of Nick Blackburn. That ball was crushed. He hit it to dead center over the like the fan deck or whatever.
Right.
But you've had a couple two-team tiebreakers. You've never had a three-team tiebreaker.
So the way that would have worked is...
I don't even know. Don't even ask.
I'm going to explain it to you.
Oh, you know.
My 15-year-old son explained this all to me the other day.
Well,
I was like, get out of here.
Smarter than me.
While he was reading it on MLB.com or something.
Verbatim?
So basically, I think he was. Each of the three teams would be assigned basically A, B, or C based on, I don't know, it's not their record against each other because it's not even, but some sort of determination. And a few days ago when it looked possible, the Cardinals would have been Team A. And I forget who B and C were. But then the Cardinals as Team A would have gotten to choose. Do they want to be the home team on Monday night?
Yes.
Or do they want to be the road team on, I think it was, or the road team on Tuesday
night? Oh, right, because
night.
The winner of the because first game the plays the second game.
No, the winner of the first game is now a wild card team. the loser of the first game gets to be the home team the next night, and they have to win that game then. So there would have been three nights of wild. How awesome! How awesome for the Cubs would that be, that whoever they have to face has to play two games?
Right, because that first game would be on Tuesday, and then you'd play the second game probably on Thursday.
No, I think no, because the division starts on Friday. I think it would have gone Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday if they had to do that.
And then if you're the Cubs, you face the third or fourth starter. Yeah. Or whoever you play,
well,
which is not fair.
The third starter, because at most they would have played two games.
Okay, all right, that's fair.
How great is that? How great would that be? Although you worry, though, that then some teams can have this momentum of, look what we had to do to get here.
Let me ask you a question. Are you nervous at all as a Cub fan?
Terribly, terribly. And I've been
You've got to be nervous.
We got to take a quick break. Pete's all over me. But I will explain. Yes, of course I'm nervous.
You should be nervous.
And as great as this is, all we do is find why this is a bad situation. We'll talk about it next. 720 WGN.
Cubs, 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 here come the Cubs. Cubs, 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 here come the Cubs.
Matt Bubalin for Justin Kaufman here on the download on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Yes, 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 Sam, I'm nervous as a Cubs fan because this is where things go wrong. Because in 2003... when WGN was the Cubs station, so I had great contacts because I'm producing John Williams' show here, and we're doing remotes at the game, and we're doing all this stuff. I was able to buy tickets for every single Cubs playoff game. So I only didn't go to one game. That was in the first round. But I was there for Game 6, and I was there for Game 7.
Where at? Where'd you sit in Game 6?
In Game 6, the Bartman I was about game. 40 rows behind Bartman.
40 rows. So you were left field side.
Yep.
Third base side.
Right behind him.
Quick sidebar real quick. I know you don't work with Pete that often. I don't know where this guy gets these songs from.
That's an old WGN jingle from
that,
like the 80s.
That is the Cubs meets the Beach Boys.
Well, we used it around here for a long time.
I love it. I always tell Kaufman, I'm like, the best part about the show is the bump back music.
I'm sure he appreciates that.
Yeah, he loves it.
So, yeah, things, I mean, and then when the Cubs clinch so early, I'm thinking, oh, God, now these games don't matter forever, and, you know, they're not fired up.
You almost talk yourself into a pretzel.
You do. You do, because you're a Cubs fan. And now, on the other side, these guys are young and they don't care. And I don't think they're going to get weighed down like Mark Pryor and Moises Alou and Alex Gonzalez did in 2003. I think that things will roll off their back. They already went through this once last year. They had great success. Then they got wiped out. I think they're young and hungry and dumb enough to not let everything get on them. I hope so, at least. I mean, who the hell knows?
You just worry about them possibly playing a power pitching rotation. When you look at Washington, Scherzer, Strasburg, Gonzalez.
Strasburg's done.
Well, no, Strasburg, is he done?
I think he's done for the year now. He just got hurt again after he came back.
I thought he was back.
His arm will fall off before the end of the year if they keep throwing him out there.
I know the Mets have some injuries. I'm a bad sports reporter if I don't know about Strasburg.
Yeah, I think you would know.
You've also got the Dodgers, too, with Kershaw. You've got some weapons there. And the team that nobody wants to face, they're just a half game up on that second wild card spot.
The Giants.
San Francisco.
See,
you don't want to face Bumgarner.
That's the team I want the Cubs to face.
Really?
I honestly do. Because they're the worst team in baseball in the second half after being the best team at the end of the first half. I know they have Bumgarner, but I think the Cubs can, in one game, beat any pitcher. You know who I'm honestly most worried about? Probably the team they should least be worried about.
The Mets?
The Cardinals.
The Cardinals.
The Cardinals.
They're currently out by a half game.
They're out by a half game, but they could easily get back in. And then the Cubs just blew them out last year, and it's the stupid Cardinals. And that's the type of thing you could expect to happen to the Cubs, that the stupid Cardinals shouldn't even make the playoffs. They'll make it on the last day, at the last minute, on some walk-off whatever. And then they'll win the wild card game, and they'll do whatever. And then, you know, that's what I'm most nervous about. I'd rather they face the Mets again.
I would not want to face the Giants with Cueto, Bumgarner. You've got Samardzija, Peavy, Matt Cain. Those are some pretty decent pitchers.
No, they're not. They're bums.
Cueto
had one World Series game, and that's it.
See, here's where you're wrong, though.
Bumgarner's the issue.
Playoff success is everything. For pitchers in the playoffs, it's what have you done for me in the postseason? And Bumgarner single-handedly won them the NLCS and the World Series against Kansas City in 14. Kane has a ring. Samardzija, I'll meet you in the middle on Samardzija. Peavy has a ring. So that's three guys in that rotation that have pitched with a lot of pressure. And you can't say that about Kyle Hendricks.
You can't.
You can't say that about Jake Arrieta.
That had to do it at one time and came through and did it. And these guys are ready to do it now. Arrieta did pitch with pressure. He pitched a one game playoff and did
great.
Yeah,
and then
great,
he threw his arm out. And he couldn't throw. And then the Mets pounded
Lester's
him all over the field.
Well, the Cubs didn't do anything, so it didn't matter. Lester's been there before. I will take the Cubs against the Giants.
They're still the favorites. They're the favorites to
they
win it
be.
All.
They should be.
They're the best team in the National League. But as you know, as Pete knows, as Justin Kaufman knows, the best team doesn't always win in baseball.
They absolutely do
It does in basketball, and usually it does in hockey.
Do you really think that Arrieta might be the Cubs' third starter in the
playoffs? Oh, absolutely. Lester's going game one, and Arrieta, if I am Joe Maddon, because Arrieta Kyle Hendricks is the best home pitcher in baseball, the best ERA, the best numbers at home, you have to start him where he's comfortable. He goes game two. I would give it to Lester one, and then nobody wants to face Arrieta on the road in game three. I mean, no other team could trot that out. Here is the NL Cy Young winner in game three. Good luck.
I think Arrieta goes game two. I'm going to bet you a dollar on that.
Well, I'll bet you. I'll raise you a dollar. Double down.
All right, you got it. Sam Panayotovich will be back Friday night at 10 o'clock with Preps Plus, correct?
Yes, 10 o'clock.
Tomorrow night. Sam, thank you so much for jumping down, buddy.
Thank you.
News is next. It's Matt Bubala in for Justin Kaufman here on The Download. It's 10 o'clock, everybody. Thank you very much for being with us. Patty Vasquez coming up at 11, but it's 10 o'clock on Thursday night, and that means Greg Flamm, the DuPage picker, is in the studio. Hey, Greg, how are you
doing?
Hey,
thanks for having me, Matt.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming in. So I know that you've been on with Justin a bunch of times.
Sure.
You guys do this pretty regularly.
Yeah, it's
so
a lot of
folks,
fun.
You folks out there know what to do. 312-981-7200. Call or text. Tell us, and I don't know exactly how to describe just the wacky stuff you have. How do you
usually it's something they want to brag about, like their Chicago memorabilia that they want to brag about, whether it's sports or a toy or a booklet from Mirror Daily or something like that.
So it's sort of a kitschy Chicago-based antique roadshow.
Yeah,
because it's not, you know, this table I got from Napoleon. It's my Riverview ticket. It's my toy from Kittyland.
Right, right. It's usually Chicago related.
Okay.
You know?
So I've got a question for you to start off. We talked about this earlier tonight because I forgot to bring it in. I'm so mad at myself.
It's all right.
The NFL has some awards banquet they used to have in Chicago every summer. I don't know if they do it anymore now. But I got to go with my high school girlfriend back in the day, and they gave out these footballs. So you had to dress up real nice, and all these football players are there in tuxedos, really dressed up, looking great.
Okay.
And you got this football that was the four leather panels on a football.
Right.
One side was the brown NFL actual thing, and then the other three are white. So you could get
autographs
from these
right.
players, these great players. So I have this football that has an autograph both by Walter Payton and Gale Sayers.
Wow.
Now, it also has some other players on it, and Chet Kopic. So,
yeah.
So we were debating earlier whether that's worth anything, and if it's kind of harmed, if I sort of whited out the other signatures and just left Gale Sayers and Walter Payton, could that then again be something?
Yeah, that's something we talk about quite a bit, like team signature stuff. Usually, one or two signatures are worth more than the whole team. It sounds odd, but that's the case most of the time. But you had something good there with Gale Sayers and Walter Payton, and then Chet Kopic kind of brought
does that hurt it?
It brings it down a little bit.
No, but I don't want this now.
But still, I mean, you know, you got the story of it. And a lot of times it's not about, I guess it's a matter of you want to sell it or you want to kind of know, you know, what it's worth in the market or whatever.
Yeah.
To decide if you want to display it or not, if it's worth it. But yeah, that's usually what the calls are about. They want to know if it's worth the value or, you know, we usually try to just say, hey, it's a cool memory. Why don't you display it on the fireplace mantle or something?
Is that what you tell people when it's not really worth anything?
When it's not worth much, and it's got more of a backstory or more personal story. Yeah. We tell them, hey, you know, why don't you keep it or frame it or display it nicely?
So two questions here. When you have memorabilia like that, so it's these two great names, if they were by themselves on it, you'd say that would be worth way more than what I have right now.
Right. Or if you just had the two, Walter Payton and Gale Sayers on the one, that would be worth quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, than just Walter Payton or Gale Sayers. But then you've got a couple other signatures that probably bring it down
a bit. That do bring it down. And what would your guess be? Would that be worth a couple $100?
Yeah, I'd say between 100 and 200 is what I'm guessing. And I usually tell people, hey, start it at that with an auction. You might get a bidding war going on it, you know,
and see what happens.
Yeah.
But it's a cool thing just to display as well.
Yeah, so, and it's a matter of how personal it is to you and, you know, if you want to sell it or if you want to keep it. You know?
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, 312-981-7200. Let us know what you've got. You brought something in that's from my childhood, but I don't remember this
Right, it's kind of rare. They made two versions. The version I brought in, it's called C Action Football Game, And basically, it was the precursor to what became like VCR football, where you would, you know, set up a board, and then to determine the outcome of the play, you would press play on your VCR for, to watch the play.
Yeah.
Well, this came out before that. It came out in 1971 by Kenner, and it came with 28 different slides that you would, you know, choose the slide, I guess, randomly and see what the play was. And it was like a cartoon form play on the screen. And it's kind of cool. I mean, I've been picking for 3 years and I haven't seen this game. So it's kind of cool to see this. I wish I would have got the one with O.J. Simpson on it because that one's worth quite a bit more. But still, it was cool to get this one.
So you found this at a garage sale?
Yeah, I got this at actually Bridgeview had Treasure Days where the whole town is a garage sale.
Oh, really?
The last, well, not last weekend, but the two prior weekends, they split it up north and south Bridgeview. And I found it at in the mobile home park of Bridgeview for, I think I paid about $3 for it, and it's worth probably about $75, so not bad for $3, you know.
And so this is what you do. Now, how often do you get these things and then resell them? And how did you, when you found this, did you say, oh, that's worth $75? Do you know that off the top of your
head? Not off the top of my head. Sometimes you just got to kind of, you know, everyone has like their niche, what they know. And mine is usually toys or old advertising, old posters, old auto manuals, things like that. So if they say the time to buy it is when you see it.
Yeah.
So if you don't buy it and you go home, you'll regret it. And you'll be like, why didn't I buy that thing? So, you know, for $3, it's worth, it's kind of like a lottery ticket and you take a chance on it.
And that's what most of the things are, right? You're never finding the person that knows, oh, this is worth $75, who's trying to sell it to you for $70.
Yeah, sometimes at the estate sales, they'll spend the time and research or look it up and they'll have that price tag, but they are selling it then for $50 or $60, you know. The key is to try to find it at a garage sale or something like that where you can get it, you know, quite a bit lower than that.
And
that's the rush.
Could people really make a living from doing this?
I guess. I mean, you know, it's a partial living, I guess, for me anyway. But, you know, people, if they, it's relative. I mean, some people are into, you know, silverware or, you know, different minerals. Rocks tend to have some bigger value. And those people can, you know, make a decent living on it. You know, with toys, obviously, once in a while you hit a home run, and it's a good supplement, I guess.
312-981-7200 is the number. What do you have that's weird or different around your house that you're either really proud of or think might be of value? Tim is on 720 WGN. Hey, Tim, you're on with Greg Flam, the DuPage Picker.
Hey, Tim.
Hello. Good evening.
Hi.
Hey, I had a quick story around 1950 in Las Vegas, my father was working, and he happened to be walking down the street one day and saw Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
Great.
And as men did in the time, he picked a check that he carried with him all the time, so he would have a check available.
Right, autographed that.
And he had just one check, and they autographed the check, and one of them, they tore it in half. And one of them autographed the front of the check, and the other one autographed the back of the check.
Wow.
So, for display purposes, you'd need one of these, you know, twin-sided, glass or plastic frames to display it.
But right, each side.
It was
yeah.
just one of those things that we've always kind of wondered if there was any value to something like that or not.
I'm not sure with that. And again, that's what we talk about in the past episodes. Are it's kind of personal to you or your family, you know, because you have the backstory on it. But, you know, Abbott and Costello, I would think they have some kind of value. You know, you can check into that. I can't tell you offhand what their signatures are going for right now, but I would say that's something personal. You might want to just display that nicely.
Need to find a nice little spinning display, Tim, that you know,
rotating,
can turn slowly.
Yeah.
And then you
go,
see
the
both sides.
The magnetic levitating thing.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, put a nice light in there or something.
Thanks for checking in, Tim. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim.
312-981-7200. Now, that's just a little out of your range, right? Because those are guys from the 40s.
Yeah, obviously, nobody knows everything. So I know sometimes we say, hey, look it up. But if they want to email me, you know, or contact me through any of the contacts, I'll be happy to look it up for them. It's just, obviously, spur of the moment.
Yeah.
It's hard to know.
You can
everything. Find
Greg online at DuPage Picker on Twitter and Facebook, or you can email him DuPagePicker@gmail.com. But we want your calls and texts. 312-981-7200. What do you have that's weird and wacky and you want to know what it costs or what you could sell it for or whether you should just display it like an Abbott and Costello check? We'll find out more next. 720 WGN. Matt Bubal in for Justin Kaufman on the download. We're speaking with Greg Flam. He is the DuPage Picker. You can follow him on social media at DuPage Picker. You can email him DuPagePicker@gmail.com. You were saying off the air that I was asking about Star Wars because when you brought in the Kenner toy, and as soon as I saw Kenner, I mean, that takes me to the 70s in my childhood,
right?
And Star Wars toys. And that's what they were just still, right, most famous for is definitely Kenner.
The Kenner era, yeah.
Star Wars toys. But you said Star Wars toys, while they're worth a lot of money, you probably don't find a lot. You, first of all, you have to find them from the
first
right set of movies,
first you have to find them,
right?
Yep. And then when you do find them, you have to hope you find it like at a garage sale or maybe an estate sale that they're not showcasing that.
Mm-hmm.
I find a lot of estate sales have the Star Wars, like Kenner era 70s, but they've got it priced basically full-blown retail.
Because
they know, yeah. So it's the key is to find it, you know, at a garage sale where people really don't know. And not that you're ripping them off, but that's part of the hunt, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just the way it goes.
Now, when you find that stuff, say you find, you know, this great Luke Skywalker figurine from the original movie, does it need to have the box? Does it need to not
it
be
helps.
Played with?
Yeah, if it's in the box, obviously you'll get top dollar. But if it's open, I mean, to give you an idea, I found a boot shoe part for a Transformer when they were die-cast. Just the little, it was in like a shoebox full of Hot Wheel cars, and I noticed this thing that looked like a Transformer foot. It sold for $56, just that little piece, and I probably paid a quarter for it.
Because somebody was looking for that one piece?
Someone
was
looking
for
those pieces,
thing?
Yeah, because Transformers obviously had a lot of small pieces, and they're missing. So when you could find those, that's, you know, people will pay big money. Even, like, the boxes on stuff, like early video games or Pong games or stuff,
yeah.
If you just find the box, they, that could be worth $50 to $70, just a box.
When you brought in that football game, I thought of the electric football games that were popular
back
in the
70s. Yeah, Tudor, the company made those.
Are those worth anything now, or are there too many?
They are. They have to be complete because they had a lot of small pieces, and they're kind of easy to find. I usually can find one every other weekend.
Oh,
I can
really?
Find one of those, and they're anywhere from $20 to $70 locally, and then you can, if they're complete and in the box, you could get a little bit more.
Is your garage filled with odd toys that you picked up over the years?
I'm in a condo, so I don't even have a garage. My living room, my dining room is just a warehouse.
Seriously?
Yeah, I put up shelves. I
imagine you must have had a storage space somewhere. No.
No, I kind of built it up while I was in a condo, so it kind of just overtook my living room and dining room. I put up shelves, wall-to-wall shelves, and just have everything filed, and I have a system, you know, this is listed, this isn't.
Greg,
you know.
I have the weirdest picture of you in my head here that is not complimentary. I feel bad because you're a very nice man. I can meet you in person. But I'm thinking of the guy from Toy Story who's trying to get the Woody doll at the and then on the other hand, you're making me think of Steve Carell and the 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Right.
You know,
I know.
You're
I know.
Some weird amalgam.
Yeah, Justin kind of, you know, talks a little bit about that. but I can tell you honestly, I've never waited out overnight for anything. I don't, you know, I'm not that guy at Walmart on Black Friday trying
anything.
To do, yeah, I don't
you
want to
find the old stuff. And
yeah, I'd rather have the old stuff anyway. I mean, and part of that is the what they call the thrill of the hunt. Just finding like that old piece of advertising or old just knickknack of some kind, like from Chicago Fest from 1983 or something.
That's
I mean,
cool.
what got this gig was a Mary Jane Byrne coloring book.
Really?
And I texted into Justin and he's like, yeah, we got to have you on. So it kind of led to this, and it's been a lot of fun.
Do you still have the Mary Jane Byrne card?
I sure do, and I almost brought in, because you haven't seen it,
yeah.
I almost brought in some of that early stuff, but I didn't want to repeat.
Was that like from the first Chicago Fest or
it
something?
It was 83. I don't think it came out during Chicago Fest, but it, obviously while she was mayor. But the funny thing about it is inside, it wasn't just Jane Byrne. It was like Steve Dahl and Irv Kupsnit.
Oh, really?
And coloring books, you know, like coloring pages, like you actually color their faces. And that was kind of funny. And then I also had a 1985 Bears halftime flag that they used during the 85 Super Bowl and Superdome. And it had directions like when to hold this flag up. And the odd thing is that back then, the halftime show was up with people. Where
yeah.
You compare that to the last 10 years with these major acts and
yeah.
How the Super Bowl has grown since
yeah.
then. That makes it a great story. They say, hey, yeah, the stupid halftime show was up with people.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I have the flag with the directions of when to wave this flag.
That's cool. 312-981-7200. Texter says, I have an autographed drumstick by DJ Fontana, who was Elvis Presley's
right.
drummer.
Yeah, that's an interesting story, and unfortunately, it's probably more the interesting story than the value. You know, if I had it, I would just keep it to brag about it.
Yeah.
You know, value wise, I put $20 to $40 max on it. I mean, I could be wrong, but that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. But if Elvis had signed those drumsticks.
Oh, yeah, it's hundreds, maybe $1,000 for really? That. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Some of the stuff from his 70s era, like the Hilton shows, just the menu from that show, like just the food menu can go for $40, just the menu, not sign, nothing. Wow. Yeah, I've seen ashtrays go for $30 from those shows in Vegas.
312-981-7200. A lot of you have questions about things that you own. Garland, you're on 720 WGN. How are you?
Hey, I'm fine.
Hi there.
Hi. I have a box from Kellogg's Corn Flakes, and it has the picture of Michael Phelps on the front. And this is from quite a while ago. And after that came out, he got caught smoking dope.
Yep.
Now I'm going to assume that's Wheaties and not Corn Flakes, right?
No, this is Corn Flakes.
He was on a Corn Flakes box, really?
Yeah,
okay.
I got the box right here. And anyhow, after he got caught, Kellogg's pulled the box off, so they didn't sell anymore. So I was thinking this just might be worth something.
Yeah, I think over time that will be worth more than it is now. You might want to hold on to that or pass it down.
This was put out, way over maybe 10 years ago.
Right. No, I totally know the era you're talking about. I think it's going to be something over time. It's going to be worth more than it is now. But now I'd say $25 to $30 maybe for it.
Thank you so much, Garland. I mean, the problem there is, right, he's still active.
Right.
A lot of new material coming out, and that was a moment in time, but it's not scandalous enough to really, like, you know, change
right.
that.
And
right?
it's not signed either, so that's the other thing. Maybe if she could find somehow to get it signed, then that would make a big difference.
Is that a huge difference in some of these things?
And something like this, what she's talking about, yes. But you always want to get the item signed. If you have it, like, in mint condition, like if you have an album that's still sealed and you can get the artist to still, you know, sign it while it's sealed, then you're going to get top dollar for it.
Okay, so there was a woman named Darva Conger.
Mm-hmm.
And she was on one of the first really trashy reality shows called Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire.
Okay.
She won. She married the millionaire, and then she divorced him immediately, and it was a big scandal, and then she posed, of course, in Playboy.
Right.
And then she was here on the radio station with us, and she autographed the copy of Playboy.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's you'll get the top dollar for that item if it's signed like that, yeah.
Was that
I couldn't tell you what
it'd
be.
$9?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking $16.25 probably for that.
It's not
worth
a lot.
Yeah, not really. But, but you got the right ideas. You want to get, the item signed by the person if you can.
Chris, John, Marsha, and Hans are all waiting in line. We've got your text, too, 312-981-7200. More with the DuPage Picker after the news on 720 WGN. Matt Bubalin for Justin Kaufman for another 20 minutes here on The Download. Patty Vasquez is up next, but we've got the DuPage Picker in. Greg Flamm is with us on social media at DuPage Picker. If you've got something you want to email him and inquire about, DuPagePicker@gmail.com. All right, so 847 writes, I have a book by Kirk Douglas that he wrote and signed. It's called The Gift. It's in mint condition. Is it worth millions?
hardly. It's probably about $25. I looked it up during the break, and signed, it's about $25, and that's including shipping.
Disappointing. 312 has a pack of 1991 baseball cards unopened. Now, we don't know if it's a pack or if it's like the complete set for the year. Yeah. If it's a pack, it's not worth anything.
Yeah, if it's just a pack, it's probably $1, $2. If it's the whole set, we're talking a different story. It depends on the year when you go with that.
And if there's some great rookies involved in that season, right?
That's what you're looking for, the rookie cards.
That would make a difference, yeah. So we don't know what they have there. And then 773 says, we have two gray plastic stands that hold the small Star Wars figures in standing positions with a lever that you move to swivel the figures. I sent in for them in the 70s from a cereal company with maybe a box top and $1 for each one. I'm fairly certain they're in the original boxes. I think each stand holds 5 of the little toys.
Yeah, that's kind of a rare thing, so I would have to look that one up. But it's, it's Star Wars. It's a cereal premium, which a lot of those got opened and played with and discarded, so to have it still in the box, the original box, is a great thing.
I
hate to say this, but look it up. It's probably worth something if you got it back in the 70s or 80s for sure.
If it was in the 70s with the original movies out, especially in the 70s,
yeah,
so that's the original movie.
Yeah,
and then I would think that's got to be fewer of those out there because, like you said, kids break them. Right, it comes as a kid's toy.
Yeah.
But also that probably was just much more rare because it wasn't a mass-produced, mass-sold thing. Right.
Right, and, you know, you had to send in for it. It wasn't – you couldn't just buy it at a store down the street.
All right. Marsha is called 312-981-7200. Marsha, what do you have for the DuPage picker?
Hi. A couple questions for you. My husband tends to hold on to a few things.
Nothing wrong with that.
And a couple buddies and him back in the 70s had a beer can collection.
Right.
And we have 300 plus at least in bins stored in my basement beer cans.
Right.
And cone tops and all that jazz. So,
yeah, the cone tops are worth more, obviously, than just regular ones. Unfortunately, it's unless you're willing to list them separately, you're not going to get great value for them. I see them all the time at garage sales. Not so much the cone tops, but the other regular cans, and I can get those for a quarter or 50 cents for most of them.
Really?
So yeah, so you're going to have to, you know, you can either list it as a complete set or pick out the ones that are worth, you know, the higher amounts.
And how do you figure out which ones are higher amounts?
Yeah, just got to take the time and enter each one, you know, on eBay. And like I always tell everyone, be sure to click on sold, not list, because someone could put a potato chip for $1 million on eBay listed. You want to look what actually someone paid their money to buy. So make sure you click the sold items.
Okay.
And you'll see right, exactly what it's selling for.
Thank you so
much. And basically all on eBay, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could sell it elsewhere too. Craigslist, OfferUp. There's a number of different sites, but eBay is probably going to be our best bet for that.
Thank you so much for calling in, Marsha. We do appreciate it. 630 writes, Gods and Generals first edition signed by the author. I don't even know who the author is. You got to tell us who the author is, at least. Is it somebody worthwhile? Then
it sounds like a nice book. I'm not familiar with it, but it sounds like something, you know,
sounds like a
prestigious
book.
Or a wonderful
all
book.
Right, John has something odd, so let's figure out from John here what we've got going on.
Great.
John, you're on 720 WGN. How are you?
Hello.
Hey, John.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I came across the Ring magazine. That's like a boxing magazine. The title of the magazine is The Ring Magazine.
Right.
And these are from the early 60s. Up until now, actually. And the ones in the 60s had a cover price of 50 cents.
Right.
And currently the magazine is sold for $10.
Yeah, on average they go for about $16 unless you have it signed or if you have like a Muhammad Ali.
You know, I Googled the thing and I saw the top end one that I saw was an Ali one. It was in 60-something and it was like $10,000.
Yeah. Was that sold, or was that, like I said, someone could list something for
anything?
You know
what? I was listening to that point, and I'm really not sure. It could have been either one.
Yeah, on the left side of eBay, there's a checkbox. Just check sold, and you'll see what actually an item like that sold for.
Okay, so as I understand, it's a monthly magazine, so there would be 12 per year.
Right.
Now, let's say you had 3 consecutive years. Would that enhance things?
That would. It would also increase the shipping. So you might want to break them up per year. Just do 12, you know, each year. You'll save on shipping, and the people who buy that might only want certain years. They might only want certain issues. So you're better to just, you know, kind of throw 1 year at a time and see. You know, people will write you and they'll say, "Hey, I only need this issue. I'll offer you this much for it."
Okay, so the bottom price for the most standard one would be approximately how much?
I'd say 16 on average, but again, I would probably start that as an auction. Don't do the buy it now for that because, you know, it only takes 2 people to bid that up. So
Correct. All right, Heath, thank you very much.
No problem.
You had a great show, man.
Thank you.
I like to meet up with you and hang around with you, go to garage sales.
You know, just all you got to do is look up estatesales.net. They list all the estate sales and get there early.
All thank right, you, John.
All right, sir. All right, thanks.
Have
good
a
luck.
Great night. 312-981-7200. 847 says Elvis Presley autograph, 1969, on the backside of a reserved sign from a table at the MGM casino.
Wow. I mean, an autograph is great by Elvis. It would have been better if it was on, like, the menu promoting a show or an album or something. I mean, they had so many souvenirs. It's insane how they couldn't get him to sign something, you know, that was related to that show.
Yeah.
But it's still an Elvis signature, and I don't know offhand what Elvis' signature is going for, but I'm sure it's he'll get something for that.
I think it's worth a little something, right?
Yeah, maybe $50, $75.
Fergie Jenkins signed 1969 Sports Illustrated magazine. Fergie's still around, still signing stuff, so that makes that tougher, right?
Right.
And, I mean, I want Fergie to stay around forever.
Right. I'm going to guess $40 maybe for that.
Okay. All right. 312-981-7200. Florence has something very interesting and very Chicago. Hey, Florence, how are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Hi,
doing
Florence.
Doing great tonight. What do you have at home?
I have an original mint condition Cuddly Dudley with his house.
Yeah, that I looked that up during the break. That's a great find. And one with the house actually sold for $450.
Okay, because now we went to Bob Bell's induction of the Clown Hall of Fame.
Okay.
And Roy Brown, who was the voice of Cuddly Dudley, signed the house for me.
Then that should even be more then. So I would start an auction, you know, start the auction at $450. And hopefully it can go up from there, but just $450 is pretty good.
I don't know if I want to part with it because I'm such a huge bozo. And
there you go. Then that's
that's
the other thing we talk about is you should find a way to display that then if you don't want to part with it.
Oh, I do have it displayed, and I've got it covered real nice, but I can just never find anybody who's got anything like that, and I've done a lot of research and.
I found quite a few that sold on eBay. I only found one that sold with the house, though, and that was the $451. Without the house, it's anywhere from $50 to $100.
Wow. Okay, wow. Thanks very much. I really appreciate it. I love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Florence. Appreciate you calling in. That's really interesting because, you know, when you get something like that, Greg, when you get something that's really Chicago, really cool, I think the artwork, you've mentioned ads and stuff like that.
Right.
Do you get stuff and you find, oh, my God, that's worth this much, but I really love this.
Right.
Do you sometimes get attached to your stuff?
I'm not attached. I'm not attached to my stuff. I don't know. I have so much stuff that I just, you know, if I can get rid of it, I get rid of it. But it's crazy what people will pay money for.
Yeah.
Just a page ad out of like a 1970s Esquire magazine will sell for $12 or higher.
Really?
If it's like Jaguar, or Porsche, some of the stereo equipment ads. Obviously, I sold a Frito Bandito ad for Frito-Lay for $12.
What kind of ad was that?
It was just a page ad out of,
Torn
out of a magazine. I mean, a lot of people, you know, caught them.
Yeah.
And how I came across is it's not something I would pick out of a sale. It happened to be rolled in with another poster. So when I opened that poster, it was in there. I just happened to look it up. I'm like, these are selling for 12 to 14. Sure. You know, I'll spend the 30 cents to list it. It's sure enough, it sold like in 2 months. And it's just crazy what people buy. That's why you got to look
that
up everything. Look it up.
312-981-7200. A couple more quick calls. You can follow Greg Flam. Sorry.
No problem.
Flim flam.
It happens all the time.
Greg Flam is the DuPage Picker at DuPage Picker on Twitter and Facebook. DuPagePicker@gmail.com if you need to talk to him directly. A couple more calls and texts next. 720 WGN. A few more minutes with the DuPage Picker. Greg Flam at DuPage Picker on Twitter and Facebook. DuPagePicker@gmail.com if you'd like to contact him directly. Hans has called 312-981-7200. Hans, what do you got laying around the house?
Yeah, years ago I picked up a leather back patch for the Flying Tigers, the American Expeditionary units that were working in China back during the Second War.
Right. Go ahead. No, I thought I heard I thought it was a backpack, but the patches, I looked those up as well, and they were about $30.
Well, this one's an original. I got it from the veteran, and it was never even sewn onto a jacket.
Okay.
I've seen the copies that are available on eBay, and those are about $30. But
right.
I'm thinking the originals might be worth a bit more.
Yeah. Okay. You're right about that. I'm just not seeing because it's such a rare item. It doesn't come up on eBay that often. That's why I didn't see that item.
Would you have any idea where I might be able to go? I mean, I'd even consider calling the Smithsonian.
I think some of the like Civil War shows. There was just one, I think, last weekend or this weekend at Wheaton, at the County Farm Road and Roosevelt Road, the courthouse area.
Yeah.
I would go to one of those type of shows, and someone can evaluate it better there. You could probably also try, some kind of antique shop. They usually have a glass case of World War II stuff. They might know. You might catch someone who's knowledgeable there.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, Hans.
One other thing I've got is a Nixon signature on White House stationery.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know what that's worth, but at least you got it, you know, right. You got it on the stationery with the signature. So,
do you know when he signed it? Was he president at the time?
He was a vice president at the time. It's a letter to my mom because she worked for the Milwaukee Road and helped him get a railroad ticket.
Okay, so it's like a personalized letter that he signed.
Yeah.
Okay. That is, we kind of file that under, it's kind of personal, you know, where,
okay.
you know, if it was just a signature, it might be worth that actually a little bit more than the letter, you know, because it's not a letter. Okay, thanks for calling. Good luck.
Thank you, Hans. You bet. You have a great night. All right. Jim has something pretty interesting at 312-981-7200. Jim, what do you have?
I hope you're talking to me this time. I got
confused.
Yes, sir.
We are.
Hi there.
I have a board game that's called Re-elect JFK. And the part of the board game written on it starts with assassination attempt fails. And what you're trying to do is re-elect JFK, and you play the game as though you're JFK.
Wow. Huh.
I've got the box and everything.
Yeah, that's. I'm trying to look that up right now as we speak. But I thought I saw one earlier during the break for about $360. I'm trying to see.
For how much?
For $360.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that's worth for you selling it or if you want to keep it.
How
for
did
that
you
amount.
Get the game, Jim?
I was going through some stuff that my brother had who had passed away. And this was one of them. Plus, I have the actual game plan for the landing of Iwo Jima from the government. It was secret at that time, of course.
Wow.
And how it's all laid out for the U.S. invasion of that island. I've got those. I've had that, you know, and just a couple of things that, you know, you find.
Right. World War II stuff is obviously very collectible, very sought after, so you shouldn't have any problem, you know, finding out what that's worth. I just can't tell you right now.
Yeah, I can look that up, yeah.
Or you can email me, whatever.
What's real strange about this game, when I saw it, I said, I can't believe who came up with this idea that, you know.
Right, yeah. I've seen them, you know, I saw one for 360, so that's kind of cool.
Interesting that somebody would have even come out with that. Jim, thank you so much for calling. We really appreciate it. Texter says, I found some loose Star Wars trading cards from the 70s in the basement. They're loose with no boxes. Any value there?
Yeah, it's devalued, of course, because the edges are probably bent, so if you were to grade them, they'd be on the lower scale. So right there, you hurt the value. I'm going to guess 50 cents to a dollar each. Yeah. I could be wrong, but
disappointing.
You know, yeah.
And then our texter about Gods and Generals wrote back again and said he knows freaking Cuddly Dudley.
That's my
but
thing.
Does not know Gods and Generals.
I know toys, but great literature.
Greg Flam is the DuPage Picker. Follow him online at DuPage Picker or send him an email if you got something cool you think you want to trade or just find out what he says about it. DuPagePicker@gmail.com. Thank you so much for coming in tonight.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. Patty Vasquez next on 720 WGN. Thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight. I'm Matt Bubala. I'll be back actually Saturday morning, late night, tomorrow night, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. That's my regular shift. Please give me a like on Facebook. Find the Matt Bubala Show. And you'll see something funny. I embarrassed the snot out of my 11-year-old daughter today. I'm considered a bad father for this, I'm quite sure. But she laughed about it and let me do it. So go check out my post there about what we got to find out today about at the doctor's office during Anna's 11-year-old checkup. They handed us some literature, which she was mortified that her dad had in his hands.